Traveling the Vortex.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed at episode number 118, and we're trapped like flies in the World Wide Web, stuck forever, calling out for feedback.
Isn't that kind of like Twitter?
It is. I'm Keith.
I'm Sean.
I'm Glenn.
Or it's like traveling the Vortex. Crying out through your headphones, making you crash your cars.
I don't know where I'm at. Or jump behind produce stands.
Only when you yell bang.
How are you guys?
Good.
Did you guys have a good Easter?
Yeah. Went to my folks today and had ham and beans.
Ham and beans,
ham and beans. It's kind of an Eastery thing we do, so.
Yeah. I had McDonald's.
For Easter?
we were going to have Subway. Subway's closed.
And Easter's one of those holidays where businesses still aren't quite sure if they want to be open or closed for that.
Of all, the business, open.
Of all the businesses out there, I would have thought, hey, Subway, yeah, no problem. No. we were on our way from one place to the because we had a birthday party this morning and went bowling, and then we were going to go do something else, and I was trying to plan out the route, and it was like, well, the mall. We'll go to the Subway at the mall. That'll be the next logical place from where we're going. And we pulled in the lot. I'm thinking, man, this place is empty for a Sunday. Oh! So there was this other family that was going up, and we kind of hovered in the parking lot waiting to see if they'd get in the door. They did not. So I was like, okay. And then Billy's like, well, isn't there a Subway over at Walmart? I'm like, oh, good call. We'll go there. So we went into Walmart, got all the way around the corner, closed for Easter. Should we even bother calling 21st and Fairlawn? Probably not.
I think if one Subway were closed, I would assume all of them were closed. But
I just thought the mall was closed. So. But, yeah, no, so that didn't happen.
Yeah.
So
I'm assuming the mall was closed, too.
Whole mall. Yeah, you couldn't get into the mall. Mm-hmm. Oh, but they tried all four doors before we made it out of the parking lot. Like, really, guys?
Just in case.
Just in case the one's locked.
Because, you know, I can't... What's at the mall that you would absolutely have to have on Sunday? For me, it was Subway, but I mean, I just...
I don't know. You crave Sbarro. You crave Sbarro.
The only place you can get it. That and Chick-fil-A.
I can see more people trying to bang down the doors for Chick-fil-A.
Yes, than Sbarro.
I'm a Sbarro fan.
I do like Sbarro. I liked Sbarro a lot more before they changed their menu all up. But
I don't go there like enough.
Back in the... Yeah, you were probably about four.
Yeah, they had a better selection back in the day.
But then I went and played disc golf, so... Yeah,
I saw some pictures.
I'm tired, man. Between bowling and disc golf, my arm's killing me today. That was stupid.
How was Mason's birthday party?
That was good. We had his birthday yesterday. Family showed up. We went to the park, and he opened a bunch of gifts, and the kids played. Nice. It was a lot of fun.
He get anything cool?
No. I mean, just, yeah, for him.
Anything Doctor Who that you've appropriated already?
No, not yet. I'm not going
to. So he got an Iron Man action figure.
Yeah,
he did.
He got a couple. He got a couple Iron Man. He got a Hulk, Batman. And my mom got him bubble wrap.
Wait a minute. One of these things is not like
the
others.
I saw that picture.
Yeah, exactly. My mom got him bubble wrap. I went to a doctor's appointment one time because my mom works for an optometrist. So I went to the doctor's appointment. And he usually goes in there and she's an insurance adjuster at the doctor's office. And so her office is in the back. So he goes in there usually and sets some colors or plays with things. And, well, she had this roll of bubble, this little square of bubble wrap. He'd never seen bubble wrap. So she showed him how to pop it, and he just had a blast with that. And before this was back in, like, November or something. And before we were leaving, she goes, Grandma, he says, Grandma, I know what I want for Christmas. And she says, what? I want bubble wrap. So my mom...
You have the best kid ever.
present. So my mom's like, oh, okay, Mason. Well, she forgot. She didn't think anything about it. And Christmas night, he opens all his presents. She goes, oh, Grandma, you didn't get me any bubble wrap. And so my mom thought, oh, my gosh, he was serious. So she felt really bad. So she said, all right, I'm getting him bubble wrap. So that was like Iron Man, yay, Hulk, yay. The big wheel, he got a big wheel. Yay, bubble wrap. Yeah! I mean, like it was, he got $1 million or something. It was hilarious. So, yeah, bubble wrap.
I was actually, when I said one of these things is not like the others, I was talking about the fact that he's got a DC superhero with the Batman compared to the Hulk.
He's
and
equal
the,
opportunity.
Okay. Yeah, so now you realize that you now have to appropriate that bubble wrap from him so that we can use it for our next sci-fi movie, because we've established that
if
we
spray paint green, it's gold. No. But that was it. Yeah, we had some cupcakes. Spider-Man was the theme. He's big into superheroes now, if you can't tell. So that was a lot of fun. And then, yeah, Caitlin's on she's back on her Doctor Who kick. So she watched New Earth and Tooth and Claw. And my big thing is, especially with we're going to talk about it a little bit later, but with the big reveal that the Great Intelligence, by the way, I was right when I said that we'd be seeing the Great Intelligence more this year, way back when Snowman first did. But my thought was, you know, I'm going to go back and, because I had seen the recons of the Abominable Snowman and Web of Fear. And I thought, you know, I'm going to go back and pick these back up and get, because I can remember much of what happened in them. I just remember the Great Intelligence and whatnot. So what I did was, I realized that in the Lost Collection, there's one episode of each. Episode 2 of The Abominable Snowman exists, and episode 1 of The Web of Fear exists. So what I did is I went and I had copies of the audios, the linking narration, where it's the audio of the show, but then Fraser Hines links the narration in it. And so what I did is I listened to episode 1 of The Abominable Snowman, watched episode 2 so that I could get some visualization, and then finished out listening to the rest of Abominable Snowman. So I finished Abominable Snowman now, which, very enjoyable story, and quite interesting kind of how it's going, and sort of in my mind links to Snowman even more so now than I think we originally thought it did. But I've just loaded Web of Fear onto my iPod, so episode 1 of that exists, so I'll watch that first sometime this week and then listen to the rest of that. And then, unofficially, that's a trilogy. I don't know if you knew that. Not including the Snowman. It's a trilogy because the downtime, the unit story that is no Doctor, but it's unit. It was done by an independent company that did it. It quasi-links to Doctor Who. In fact, they novelized it with the Virgin New Adventures. Or was it? Yeah, well, Virgin.
Because Nicholas Courtney
is in it. Sarah Jane Smith is in it.
Liz Sladen.
Victoria Deborah Watling is in it. Ooh. And a man, her father, I didn't realize this until I went to look it up. Her father's name, I think, is David Watling. And he plays, the guy's name escapes me now. He plays a character in The Abominable Snowman. What is his name? He's this guy that's looking for the Yeti, is what he's
doing. Oh, he's the crazy exploring scientist.
Exactly, that's him. He's not a scientist. Yeah, I think he's just an explorer. He's just trying to get proof of the Yeti or find the Yeti. But, so he plays that character. Why can't I remember the guy's name? Travers. He plays Travers. And so he comes back, and Deborah comes back, and they play their same characters in downtime. So it's kind of a third part, and it has to do with the Yeti return, and the Great Intelligence return. So it's almost kind of a quasi third part to this. So I'm on a lookout now for downtime, and I'm gonna, as soon as I get done with Web of Fear, I'm gonna move on to downtime and do the whole trilogy.
Nice.
So maybe someday I'll do a review. Well, obviously I'll eventually get around.
We'll do a Great Intelligence archive.
There you go. That's not a bad
archive
idea.
On the Great Intelligence.
There you go. Yeah, we'll do that. Anyway,
we'll just watch the Snowman for a Friday.
That's been my endeavor this week. So I got the Abominable Snowman out of the way and on to the next one. So
very nice. Cool. Yeah. Keith, what'd you do?
Yesterday we celebrated Easter with Sarah's family. Took the nephew for a little bit, went to the zoo, which I looked over at the park. I didn't see you guys, so
back behind the train because there's those tables over there and there's no mud. Wait a minute, you guys didn't go to
We ended up not Manhattan going. Then. Yeah, we figured it didn't know if it was going to rain, and
yeah, it was quite iffy there for a while.
In the morning before we picked him up, he was in kind of a mood, so we didn't know if we wanted to risk an hour drive.
Sure,
but he was great the entire time at the zoo. Didn't get to see the baby orangutan, so that was kind of disappointing.
Oh, no, why not?
Baby and mama just weren't out on display. That's too bad. I don't know where they were. But then we went back, and he got a bike.
Yeah, Sarah had posted some pictures,
and so he and his dad pushed him on the bike while he was trying to teach him how to pedal while I was setting up the grill, and Sarah and her mom hid Easter eggs. And so he comes back and he climbs in the back of his dad's truck or his grandpa's truck and playing with his toys and doesn't notice the eggs anywhere. And then I think it was Sarah's mom pointed it out to him. It's like, hey, look, there's an Easter egg over there. And he's like, what? And the look on his face of, oh, it must be Easter. And so then he went and explored and did
sort
all that.
Sunk in.
Yeah. That was great. And then and then today we went and did Easter with my family and hid Easter eggs for my second cousins. And then got a new couch for my father. Got rid of the futon that we used for a couch, and that was an adventure getting it up the stairs.
Is it a sleeper?
No.
Oh, okay.
But it's heavy.
Yeah.
And it's really long. And the way our stairs, it's half a flight, and it's a quick turn.
Yeah.
So we had to stand it upright.
I'm
and
sure.
Try to get it. It was,
surprised you didn't have to go up and over the
We thought about it.
There.
If it would have been easier.
If that way didn't work, we weren't...
Huck.
It's too heavy to huck. And
yeah, you just stand it up on end. You could have called me.
Yeah. Well, we were going to try that and then maybe call like Julian and Patrick over to help push it up. Because
it's not like you don't know people that live in this complex.
Because it was me and my dad and Sarah and my stepmom. And my dad and my stepmom loaded into the truck on their own, which I'm not quite sure because my stepmom is fairly small and
she's
looks
not a large
frail.
Lady. Yeah.
But they were able to do it. And because we were going to go over there and help them load it up and bring it back over here. And I go to call him, and he's like, we'll just step outside. And he was out in the parking lot already. He really wanted to get rid of this couch, apparently.
That's a nice couch.
It is a really nice couch. And that's about it. Sean, you bowled and you did disc golf.
Yeah,
anything else?
Bowled and disc golf.
Didn't he go first?
Yep.
I didn't know if there was more.
Yeah.
Is there more?
He kind of interrupted you in your weekend.
He did?
Yeah.
I didn't think I had started yet.
That's okay.
No, I bowled and I disc golfed.
Oh, okay.
That's about it.
Not a bad weekend.
Oh, I thought of something, by the way. I may include it as a... Maybe we'll do a side trip. Caitlin's interested in recording some audio about Doctor Number 9, so I thought I'd sit down and talk to her and get her perspective, and maybe we'll release that as a side trip.
That'd be a great
cool
side trip. Well, you did watch Rise of the Guardians.
Oh, I guess I did do that.
In the Easter spirit.
Kind of fitting that it set like 3 days before Easter, and we wound up watching it 3 days before Easter, which was just kind of weird.
It is set before Easter?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll be darned.
I thought it was a Christmas movie.
Well,
it came
out at Christmas.
It came out at Christmas.
Which is interesting because it's, I think
they
Saint
got it
Nick's
out on
in
DVD.
It, right?
Yeah.
So Saint Nick's in it, and it came out in the movie theater at Christmas, and it came out on DVD at Easter, so I guess that was fitting.
How that whole thing started is Mel's like, well, it's over at the Dollar Theater. Do you have any interest in going to see it? And it was kind of like... No, not really. I mean, I watched the preview. It was like, meh. Now, having said that, I told her this. Billy brought home from the library Arthur Christmas, the one about Santa's son. It looked horrible. It just looked really bad. And he was watching it one day. And I have to be honest, I kind of was just passing through the room and did one of those and, man, got sucked into it. And it was actually a very, very clever story. Mm-hmm. And it was really surprisingly well done. The animation is still junk, but the story was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And so I told him, I was like, oh, I just on surface value, I don't have any interest in Rise of the Guardians. But having just seen this Arthur Christmas thing, maybe I'm out of line by that one, because that one really surprised me. Well, she and Sarah went and saw it at the Dollar Theater.
Yeah, Thursday night.
Thursday night. And then Mel came back and went, I'm buying that movie. You're watching it this weekend. Because it's awesome. Okay. So she went on this mad quest and found it Friday, and we sat down and watched it, and it was really good. It surprised me how much I enjoyed it. But, it kind of deals with this idea that all these, icons of childhood, the Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, the Tooth Fairy, and Sandman have actually been put in place. They've been chosen by the Man in the Moon to be guardians of children and protect children from the boogeyman. I was like, oh, okay, well, that's kind of a cool, idea. And then Jack Frost is becoming the new guardian. It's got a great voice cast. Hugh Jackman, Chris Pine, and Alec Baldwin plays Santa as a Russian.
Uh-huh. Jude Law.
Jude Law's the boogeyman. So it was really pretty good. I was very, very, very surprised. Did not expect anything good out of it all. And then Keith came over and was like, dude, you got to watch this. It was really good.
No, I still haven't seen it.
You still haven't watched it?
I still haven't watched it.
Oh, okay.
I took Mel's copy of the Blu-ray home that night. And we just haven't had time to watch it.
Because I'm sure Sarah's bugging you about it. Because she really liked it, too.
Yeah, she really did like it. So hopefully this week we'll be able to watch it sometime.
Mel was real impressed with the take on Santa. Because that's one of those things, you watch any movie with Santa Claus in it anymore, it's almost, all right, what are we doing this time? You know, and just the idea that because he's playing him as a Russian, it's kind of a little more authentic. And fun tie-in is the fantastic scene. I'm not spoiling anything here, but they get up to
Nicholas wasn't Russian.
I thought he was.
Germanic. He was from, like, Scandinavia or something. One of the Scandinavian
countries. He's playing him with an accent.
One of those accents.
I assumed it was Russian. But
it's one of the Germanic or Scandinavian countries.
But so they get up to the North Pole, and there's Yeti, like huge Yeti all over the place. And Jack Frost goes,
Turkish.
Turkish, there you go.
He says,
that's not even close to
it. Oh, it is. It's right in between both of them.
Right in between.
Just split the difference. But Jack Frost looks around all these Yeti making toys, and he says, I always thought the elves did this. And Santa leans over and goes, that's what we let them believe. And then they pan over, and the elves are pretty much like the minions from Despicable Me without the ability to get anything right. They're all idiots. And the one's wrapped up in Christmas lights and plugs it in and electrocutes himself. And Santa goes, you're doing a good job! And the elf smiles and goes back to, you know, fiddling with something. Meanwhile, the Yeti over here hammering and making cars and stuff. And I was like, okay, yeah, why not? So, but it was really cute.
Well, good. Very good.
Well, shall we move on to news?
Let's do it, because there was some big news this week.
No, yes. There wasn't.
Well, let's start with IO9.
Well, last week we discussed the March Madness bracketology that they put together for the sci-fi TV shows.
And I am so angry that I didn't get to jump on that, because I would have corrected some of them votes.
What do you mean you would have corrected some of the votes?
Game of Thrones did not need to go all the way down to, what was it?
I had it going past Star Trek, actually.
Yeah, I didn't have it going past Star Trek.
That's such don't get me wrong, it's a good show, but they're basing it on the show solely, so you can't take into account any of the book. Right. No, that's what they said. They said it's TV, it's not any of the books.
But regardless, it's the fandom voting on it, Game of Thrones fans are pretty rabid.
But that's just it. I don't really care how rabid your fans are. If you're basing this on the television show, you've only got two seasons under your belt. And you're on HBO.
I think that only works
if it's not open to public voting.
Yeah, that's just it. When you open it to public voting, it's a fandom thing. It doesn't have anything to do with the quality of the show.
No, I agree. It's just a flash in the pan because it's current.
Well, right?
It's for the same reason that Walking Dead was as high.
I think Game of Thrones was a
two season.
Right now, it's a flash in the pan. I mean, we're only on a third season of Walking Dead.
It was a two seed because the final four was all number one.
It's huge. That's what it's got. It's momentum. It's a young team,
but that's just because
it's playing well right now.
Going right now. So I think that, as with all things in the NCAAs, I think there were some seeding issues.
See, I disagree.
Yeah, I don't think Game of Thrones is a two seed.
Anyway. You wouldn't have been able to seed it differently. You wouldn't have had any influence.
They didn't ask me on the seeding.
Yeah, no. But yeah, no. I think it all played out pretty well, and Doctor Who won, so that's
rightfully so.
Yeah. Which is why we're talking about it.
Exactly. Because it wouldn't be if Doctor Who lost, we would probably wouldn't be saying anything about it. No. So
do you think maybe that was set up a little bit by the selection committee from IO9 that they wanted, because I thought it was a little odd that the final four really wound up, it was all four number one seeds. It was Star Trek versus the X-Files and Doctor Who versus Next Gen.
Yeah.
Which
that didn't really surprise me.
On the surface, that setup really lends itself to a Star Trek versus Doctor Who championship game.
Oh, yeah.
Which is what we had.
Well, yeah. That's true. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe.
I don't think so.
But congratulations to Doctor Who for winning a meaningless... a meaningless fan club.
It just shows you how far Doctor Who has come, because this couldn't have happened 20 years ago.
Yeah, no, not absolutely not.
In the U.S.
Well, hell, it wouldn't have been a number one seed 20 years ago. It would have been maybe a 16.
Yeah, it would have been down there with, Blake 7 and what was the other one? The other British sci-fi that was on there. Wasn't there another one?
There was quite a few.
Space 1999.
Quartermass was on that on there.
Space 1999 was on there. Quartermass was on there.
Space was
Red Dwarf was on there.
I thought for
Red
Dwarf was on there.
I don't think Space 1999 was on there.
I don't remember.
I don't think it made it.
Well, it should have been. I can't back that up and retain it. I also love their comment about they had a separate Whedon bracket.
Yes.
Because Whedon's television shows don't play nice with others.
Right.
And
I didn't realize none of his shows were on the bracket until that came out.
Yeah.
And then it was Buffy versus Dollhouse, which, of course, Buffy obliterated it. and then Firefly versus Angel.
Which, of course, Firefly obliterated.
So then it's Buffy versus Firefly, which, of course, that's the championship game that you want to see. So, of course, they're seeding these properly. I was actually a little surprised that it wasn't a closer battle. Firefly won handily.
And, oh, I mean, not that surprises me. I didn't see that.
Yeah, I knew Firefly would.
I knew it would win, but I didn't think it would handle.
Yeah, it won handily. It was like 60-40, I think. It was a pretty big wow. So that almost makes me wonder what happens if you would have thrown it in the mix with everything else.
Mm. Firefly might have came out on top in general.
Might have. Well, it's been other outlets have voted it the best science fiction show of all time. So
now I'm curious because I don't think that would have happened. I don't think it would have come out on top. It would have sure messed things up, but I don't think it would have come out on top.
It might have also depended on where they placed it in the brackets and what it went up against.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it would have mixed things up. I don't think it would have.
See, that's one of those things. If you really look at it on the balance, I mean, don't get me wrong, I do agree. I think Firefly is one of the best shows
ever. It belongs in the final four.
And it certainly belongs there. But if I were actually seeding this based on strength of show and the fact that, well, it's only got 13 episodes. It was canceled after its first season. It never found an audience. They did have a movie, but the movie only made $30 million. I mean, you look at all those factors in the life of this thing. I'd have made it maybe an 8 seed.
All of that, yeah, me too. And all of that would have lent to the fact that I don't think it would have, it couldn't have taken top out of all of those. But it sure would have thrown a monkey
wrench. But again, if you throw it in there as fan-based with the voting like this was, yeah.
I hardly doubt that. Yeah,
I don't know. There's a lot of brown coats.
There are a lot of brown coats online, but not with the base that like even Doctor Who has, or Star Trek, or even DS9 or Next Gen has.
Oh, I think it would definitely would be DS9.
They're not out there.
I think you'd be surprised.
No, I'm pretty plugged in. There's not that many brown coats. If that was the case, you'd see that in a lot more of your like mainstream pop culture sites, and you don't. You see Firefly. Don't get me wrong. I'm not underplaying Firefly, but it doesn't have the fan base that you see. You see the frequency of Doctor Who and Star Trek and Star Wars and that kind of stuff turn up a lot more in general popular culture sci-fi stuff than you do Firefly. It's probably fifth, sixth, seventh down the line somewhere as far as frequency. So
I don't think
it would.
In many ways, it's probably science fiction's best kept secret still. The brown coats.
You only say that because you're huge fans.
Well, no, I'm a huge fan.
I think Firefly has found its fan base. It has found it. I don't think there's a lot of people out there still that haven't seen it. Would just
my mom
bubble
hasn't
up
seen
joy
it.
With.
She'd love it if she ever watched it. I just can't get her to watch it.
I don't think it has those numbers. I just don't.
Well, that's just it. I disagree with Keith. I don't think the numbers are that huge, because if they were that huge, Serenity would have made more money.
Right.
I mean, that's just the bottom line. But like the Tenet fangirl base, they're very, very vocal. That small group of people
are
screaming.
You got to put it this way. I've probably met online as many people that don't like Firefly as I do that do. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, Nobody doesn't like Firefly.
No, I'm serious. And that's why I don't I think it is people that have seen Firefly and they couldn't get into it, or they got two or three into it and didn't catch on.
Yeah.
Well, so that's the point though, is you guys are huge fans. So you're colored a bit. I'm a fan. I love Firefly. It's a great series. If I were to rank it on a scale of 1 to 10, it's probably a 10 as far as all my favorite sci-fi stuff. So my point is that...
10 being good, or 10 being 9 other things in front of
it? 9 other things in front of Firefly, for certain. But
that didn't sound like a Glenn comment. I thought for a minute he'd been fooling around with the Wi-Fi button.
But that's my point is, I think it's got a huge fan base. Don't get me wrong. I'm not underselling Firefly. It's just not as big as you either A, want it to be, or B, think it is. Because and when you say it's science fiction's best secret, I don't think that's true anymore. I think it used to be, and I think that's why it's got such a big fan base now, is because it has found its fan base. It's taken this long to find its fan base, but it has found its fan base. I don't think there are a lot of more people under there that haven't scurried under that rock and found it. So.
Maybe not.
It's just and because it frequently shows up now in the sci-fi genre, but it doesn't still as much as some of the other ones that have had some longevity too.
Yeah.
Granted, don't get me wrong, that certainly plays into it as well. So
I never underestimate fandom. I didn't think Veronica Mars fans were that rabid. And
I'll
to
tell
make
you, that,
$2 million
that,
in,
that
in
does,
less than
that's
24
a good
hours
argument, because that was very surprising. I didn't think that.
I thought it was going to be a struggle to reach
the problem
the
with Veronica Mars though is it's It's a different type of genre show.
Well, yeah.
It has...
But it's a huge cult show, regardless of the genre.
But it also has that young girl fan base, too. So that leads to...
So, okay, I think there's as many guys as there is girls in Veronica.
This
being plugged into the Veronica Mars fan club.
But it has that built in. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying there aren't as many fans, but it has that built in girl fan base that most girls are going to come to it and go, oh, this is a great show. There's guys that come to it and they recognize, hey, this is a great show. But there's a lot of girls that are just because of who it is. It's a strong female lead.
Because
it's something to gravitate to for young fans, for young female fans.
See, I haven't met as many women that like the show as men.
Yeah. Well, here's an interesting point. Now, obviously, there's a slew of red tape and things like that. Let's throw all that out the window just for the sake of argument. All that's cleared up. If you were to go and do a Kickstarter campaign for a season, even if it's just one season, of Paul McGann, Eighth Doctor Adventures, do you think the Who fans are ravenous enough that they could make a dent in getting somebody's attention with
Here's the difference, though, is, yeah, you're right.
I'm ravenous enough, but I'm a huge Paul McGann fan.
You can't throw out the red tape, because here's why Veronica Mars worked. The people that were behind the startup campaign were the core people for the show, for the series.
Yeah.
So if you had that in Doctor Who, if you had even like Russell T. Davies or something, somebody, it wouldn't have to be Moffat, but somebody, and you had Paul McGann, and you had, you know, those core players. Exactly. I think you would have the ravenous fan base to get it going. But it couldn't be just some fan saying, hey, I want to get this to happen. That wouldn't happen.
If it were approached the same way that Veronica Mars was done, I think it could happen.
Veronica Mars had credibility. Attached those names to the Kickstarter, it had credibility automatically, built in.
Well, and plus it helps that for the past 5 years, Rob Thomas has been talking about trying to get a Veronica Mars movie made and just couldn't get the studios to
pay attention. Yeah. The Kickstarter made the studios perk up and go, oh, well, there is.
Well, does that strike anybody as a little bit of... I don't know. How unfair are you being to your own fans then that you do the Kickstarter campaign and you contribute to it and you raise $2 million and then you're going to go make this movie and release it in theaters and then you got to go pay for it again to go see it? I mean, is it, you know?
Well, depending on how much you donated, you get a free copy of the DVD. Right. There's all sorts of perks you get for donating.
Of course, you're going to go see the movie, though, if you donate it. So you're going to pay. He's right. You're still going to double pay, but still.
I mean, I'm sure the studios are loving it. The studios at this point have got to be scratching their heads going, how can we make this to our advantage? Oh, let's just throw everything out there. Would you like to see a Sequest DSV movie?
That's what this will have done. Is this? We're going to see a new era in movie making, and this is going to be a new approach to movie making. I really have a feeling that this is just the precedent that will start the ball rolling for things like that.
So. I just really hope Brian Fuller gets his foot in that door.
Gets away?
Gets his foot in that door.
Oh, for Pushing Daisies?
Yeah, another season of Pushing Daisies.
I'll tell you, I still don't see the death knell for Firefly because it's still one of the best, most popular Netflix things. And with House of Cards being so successful and them getting ready to launch Arrested Development next month,
well, and that other new show that they're starting too,
Firefly could find another home. That's the next thing too. So I don't see anybody as dead in the water now. I mean, just. Based on the fact that if Arrested Development does well and the other series of things that come out, I mean, House of Cards, they expected it to be successful. They didn't expect it to be as successful as it's been. And that's the other thing is they realize that you offer everything. You don't say we're going to hold it week to week or whatever, release a little bit at a time.
They release a
season. House of Cards is all there. You got the whole season.
The whole first season only.
Yeah, Arrested Development will be the same way. It'll be the whole season, the whole fourth season. I've got air quotes here. Because it's going to be quite different. I think people will be shocked about Arrested Development. I hope it's done well, but I think people will be shocked since if you watched three seasons of Arrested Development, it's characters placed throughout the entire show. So there's, you know, Buster's got a story, Michael's got a story, Job's got a story. You know, so you've got... But with the fourth season
is going to be told.
It's
going to
be exactly. It'll be all Michael, all George Michael, all Job. That'll be all their story that might lend to the success or whether it plays off or not. Plus, if they decide to really go through with the movie,
I really ought to get on that one.
Oh, man. That's my third favorite TV series of all time. So good. So good. All right. Well, we've talked enough about... We digressed from March Madness, IO9, all the way down to...
Hey, how about them Shockers?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, going to the Final Four. How about KU? Oh.
Snicker, snicker.
Who drives the lane? You're down by two. You got 9 seconds left. You go all the way down the court. You drive the lane.
It's karma.
Yep. And then decide to kick it out to go for that three-pointer.
It was karma.
I mean...
I didn't know that was that player's name.
Was it Elijah Thomas? Is that who it was? It was Elijah Thomas who kicked it out. He was also the one that cock-checked somebody in the beginning of the game. Intentionally.
I missed that.
He intentionally did it. Karma.
Yep.
We were out and about, and I was just standing around with a bunch of people at Best Buy. Everybody's screaming at the television. Yeah. What are you doing? So, but hey, Shockers.
I'm rooting all the way. Rooting for them all the way.
They haven't busted your bracket yet. I'm impressed.
Really
quick.
You
must live in Wichita.
Yeah. Really quick, let's talk about Summer Falls. We're going to talk about the actual episode in relation to Summer Falls in a little bit. But
they are going to be... BBC Books are releasing a new ebook to tie in with The Bells of St. John, Summer Falls by Amelia Williams. It will be released Thursday, April 4th. I don't see a price point.
Bet it's what was the Melody Pond one? I want to say it was like $4. Ebook was like $4.
Seems about right.
Something like that. So I'll be probably about the same.
So you can read the book that the Spoonhead emulated. Where
the book Spoonhead emulated the author of, or no, the picture character girl, of, the yeah. character of. That's right.
Written by Amelia.
Did you happen to notice the cover art on it? Now that you, because when yeah. it's hard to see it when it's, you know, just and gone.
When they had that tight shot where it really gave you a chance to see Amelia Williams
but,
on
but
it.
But more importantly, the two girl. Characters in the background.
Oh, I didn't look at the background.
Look at the two boys in the back. It's totally John Watson and Sherlock.
Oh, I could see that.
You think so? I looked at that too, and I didn't think.
I totally think it's them. I mean, actually, they won't play into the story, but it looks like them.
I didn't know that until I was on Reddit and I saw somebody had posted that, and I was like, so I looked really close. I was like,
look at that kid. It's Benedict Cumberbatch as a kid.
I could see John Watson, Martin Freeman more than Benedict.
Just quickly, now that we're talking about tie-ins, have you guys seen the? Theory that the little boy and girl that run through
the
prequel
picture.
Is Rose and Mickey in the prequel that
when he's on
the swing, you see a little black boy and a little white girl run through with blonde hair, and they're perpetuating that that's Rose and Mickey, because then there's the mother has blonde hair because she's the one over standing talking to Amelia's mom, and they say she looks like Jackie. So I don't know. I don't know if there's anything to it now.
But. Way to reach fans.
Yeah. Way to reach. Yeah.
I'll buy that for $1. Why not?
I think fans are also really reading a lot into the lines. What chapter are you on? 10. 11's the best. You'll cry your eyes out. The good kind of crying.
Right.
I think you're reading too much into
delivered
that.
Line
you
for
think
that,
so?
Though. Oh, yeah. Knowing that an Amelia Williams wrote the book.
Yeah.
Come on.
I don't know.
Chapter 11. Yeah. No, she's that was all. That was
I
all
don't there. Know.
That's a novel thing.
It might have been.
I don't know the name of it. Now that you brought up this book, I was at Barnes and Noble this week, and there is I don't know if it's a new line or not. They look new, but there's Doctor Who books out that are not from BBC Books. They're different construction. They're paperback, but they're like trade paperback, so that kind of slightly thin but larger size paperback book. But it was a series of Doctor books, and they're fiction. But they're written by, like, Nicholas Briggs, Barnaby Edwards. I mean, they were, like, relatively big-name books for these authors. And they were just little fiction stories that ran, you know, 150, 160 pages or so. And I
Are
thought,
they doctors? I
mean, yeah.
It's about the doctor.
It was all 11th Doctor stuff.
They're all 11th
Doctor. And I thought, where did these come from? Because it's not something that we've...
Do you remember any of the names?
God, I wish I did now. No.
It's not And the Daleks, right?
Nope.
Or Dalek Generation? Was it?
Let me see the cover of that.
Not the cover?
It kind of looks like it, maybe.
That's the new line that we talked about a while ago. It is paperback.
Oh, we did. We talked about those. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was I awake for that? Because I missed that.
I don't know.
Maybe you were gone.
I think it was the
sometimes
same time.
Sometimes I slip off.
Just, I don't remember.
You
what
might
other
have gone
in
the bathroom.
Yeah, maybe that was it.
Because there's a bunch. There's four different.
It was
books.
When we talked about the book. Remember we talked about? I had said that I wanted to get the 11.
Right. I remember that.
Group came out. It was back when we talked about it.
Yeah,
then.
It was part of news at one point.
Oh, right. Right. Okay.
They're I think out. That's what made me. Oh. That's what brought it up to me was I was like, oh, I want the ones that are it, because we were talking.
Oh,
because
that's out a different set.
Yeah, that is a different set.
They're supposed to be out Tuesday. If they're on the shelf already, they're early.
Yeah. Well, they had three of the four out. So.
Was Dalek Generation the one?
I don't know. Maybe.
Plague of the Cybermen.
No.
Shroud of Sorrow. Would you please, Sean?
Yes.
Why didn't you take a picture?
You have a smartphone. Come on.
Yeah, it'll come out April 2nd.
Subconsciously, he said, I don't need it. We probably talked about it.
Well, we did.
Exactly. So
I didn't want to buy anything that wasn't officially licensed by the BBC. So I was like, I don't care who wrote it. I'm not buying it.
They're licensed. They're licensed. They're just not BBC books.
Yeah, it just didn't say BBC
books. It's a Crown Publishing.
Right.
It threw me because we just got done talking about that whole thing with maybe Target, maybe somebody else.
But there's BBC right above, like...
It's the official logo. I get
it's
that.
It's the official logo. I would still go, oh, yeah, that's just...
Well, you know, quite honestly...
He's saying it's not by BBC Books.
One of the other things...
A lot of those are.
So. One of the other things that I think threw me is the fact that they were all Clara. They're 11th Doctor and Clara. Uh-huh. And I kind of got to that, you don't know anything about Clara yet. I'm not buying your book.
Unless
come back after you've read the Bible.
I don't know. Justin Richardson.
I'm sure they do.
Yeah, they have.
But I would be hesitant to pick up one of those books because I don't want to know much about Clara until I'm done with this season.
Well, I have a feeling it's going to be just like the early Amelia books where there's not a lot of depth to the character.
Yeah, but if I'd read any of those books, well, of course, they're supposed to come out Tuesday.
Yeah.
But if I'd read any of those books before I saw this episode, The Bells of St. John, I'd have been mad. I probably would have been.
Well, that's
upset,
why they're not released until Tuesday.
Well, apparently they're out. That's what I'm saying.
Well, here's the deal. It's like, okay, so we read.
How many pages? You said about 170.
Yeah, 170. I mean, they're not much in there. What's the angel one? Touched by an Angel. Touched by an Angel. So we read Touched by an Angel.
How could you forget?
Yeah. And it's, you know, the Weeping Angels and this whole thing. Well, then we kind of had to retcon the plot with the later episode that kind of switched it up on us and didn't reveal it. Well, then I was looking on my shelf and I've got. As Silent Stars Go By, mm-hmm. with the Ice Warriors.
I know you do. You know why?
Yeah, because it was given to me by somebody sitting at the table.
Yeah, very good.
So I was kind of like, yeah, I think maybe I'll read that next time we do book reviews. But then I was like, oh, but the Ice Warriors are going to be in this season with the 11th Doctor. So how much of that one am I going to have to retcon?
Yeah,
so there
exactly.
was kind of this whole, I don't want to read anything about Clara.
That's why
until.
I sort of want to read that before this Ice Warrior story comes out.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe so that I could say, okay, this was what was established, and then this came along. So, yeah. I think that would sort of help, but...
I don't know. Sorry, tangent, but books are out.
All right, here's your assignment. Silent Stars Go By. You have to have it read by the time the Crimson... What is it? What's the...
Cold War. Which is third.
Yeah.
We're going to slip it in there. Let's slip it in there.
Not happening.
Not happening.
Oh, is that next week? Or not next week. The week after?
No, it's the week after.
It's in the first batch.
Well, it's not the third.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, the third story. I'm sorry, I thought you meant the third.
No,
like
not
the
third.
April
the third. But
oh, piece of cake. That's 2 weeks.
With Planet Comic on it.
Well, piece of cake. 2 weeks.
Working overnights, so I can do that.
You'll be fine. No, I'm just kidding.
I can't sleep at my desk at school.
I plan on reading several books this next week.
Woo!
Anyway, Summer's Falls comes out next week.
This week.
This week.
That's what he said.
Thursday.
I'm counting today.
Oh, it comes out the same day as those other books.
No, those come out Tuesday.
Damn it.
And Cold War airs the 13th.
It doesn't matter now.
It's the third of the new stories.
Yes, yes. Episode. All right, the other big news.
10.
Big news that leaked.
Doctor Who's back on the air.
It's sad that the BBC, this
screwed
is like the
it up.
Third time, that they screwed up and had to say, okay, we'll tell you a week earlier than we were going to tell you.
John Hurt's going to be in the 50th anniversary.
John Hurt in the 50th anniversary. That's awesome.
Everyone should know who he is.
Yes, pretty much.
If you don't, shame on you.
Sean is...
they got that.
Pantoing a... pantomiming an alien bursting out of his chest.
Oh, no. Not again.
Oh, yeah, Spaceballs.
I was going Spaceballs. So yeah. You should know who John Hurt is.
Not to mention, he's the Elephant Man.
He was the Elephant Man. And he was Ollivander in Harry Potter.
Do we establish how many we're up to now in Harry Potter?
Ox, alum? Oxley.
And
Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Yeah, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
And V for Vendetta.
V for Vendetta, 1984. He was in Orwell in 1984. Another dystopian.
Caligula and I, Claudius.
Yeah. But that was a TV series.
But you know who else was in that?
Not a movie. Not the movie, I, Claudius.
No.
He wasn't Caligula and Caligula.
He wasn't Caligula. That was Malcolm
McDowell. He was Caligula in I, Claudius.
But he was Caligula and I, Claudius. But you know who else was in I, Claudius?
Or TV movie.
Derek Jacobi.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So there's an extra tie-in for you.
I didn't know that.
Although, I, Claudius has two to Harry Potter's... What are we up to? Did you do the count?
Now?
No, it's bigger than that.
Longer
it was
than
six.
That.
I think, like I said, we're almost double
seven
digits
now.
Seven or eight.
Adding Warwick.
Yeah.
And it depends on if we're talking just the one episode, or the one movie, or all the Harry Potter series.
Well, in order to count John Hurt, we'd have to count all of them.
I think you do the whole series anyway. I mean, the Goblet of Fire thing was kind of a neat thing.
We got Barty Crouch. We got David Tennant. We got Warwick Davis. We got now John Hurt. We've got...
Filch.
We've got...
Mr. Weasley.
And we've got...
the girl who played... The woman who played Cassandra.
Yeah.
Oh, and the woman who played Cassandra was Madame Hooch. So that's eight.
Because
Moaning Myrtle's in there, too.
Moaning Myrtle. And there's one other one. Hang on. It'll come.
Oh, Dumbledore.
Yeah.
Nine.
Yeah.
That's not the one I was thinking of, but yeah, that is one. There's another one that
Toby Jones was Dobby.
Toby Jones was Dobby?
Yeah.
No, why?
Bill Nye.
Yeah, Bill Nye. Was,
so that's 11.
Scrimgeour.
The Queen Vampire from Vampires in Venice was in it?
That's who it was. She was Malfoy.
Mrs. Malfoy.
Yeah, what's her name?
Mrs. Malfoy.
What's her name?
Mrs. Malfoy.
They really need to update this infographic.
It starts
infograph.
With a
name. Mrs. Malfoy.
What was her name?
Oh. Nymphona.
No, Nymphona was... Yeah, that was Tonks, actually. Nymphadora.
Oh, you're right.
Who's on Game of Thrones?
It seems like it starts with an N.
Is she on Game of Thrones?
She's the one that's friends with Bran, the wildling.
Tonks?
Yeah.
Games with Thrones? Game of... Oh, I'm going to watch that now.
Pretty sure that's her.
I got a little thing for her. She's cute. No, anyway. Sorry. That's enough to get me to watch Game of Thrones.
It takes a little bit for her to pop up, but she gets there.
Hmm.
All right. Yeah, never mind. I was going to...
Yes, that's what I was trying to remember was the fish lady.
The fish lady. So
yeah, we're in double digits.
We're in double digits now.
Harry, so
Potter, Harry Potter alum that have moved into Doctor Who.
When are we going to get Robbie Coltrane?
Oh, no lie.
Yeah,
awesome.
No kidding. Why haven't we got Robbie Coltrane? All right.
He plays an ice warrior.
Anyway, so, yeah, John Hurt in the 50th anniversary.
Huge news.
Yeah.
And shame on BBC for
another
not...
Another big name.
Well, should we move on to feedback?
Controlling their leaks better.
Should we move on to feedback?
Well, I guess maybe we should mention a couple more people that are going to be
in. I guess
in.
There was that little... There was just a couple more casting news for that.
Why do we pretend this is, like, everybody heard this? They're all sitting at home going, ha-ha, guys. Very funny. It's not like we didn't read this and all go, at the same time.
So that's the question, though. As everybody knows that David Tennant and Billy Piper are returning for the 50th anniversary.
Confirmed!
Honestly, Sarah...
The question was posed now by both of you. Will it be Handy? Will it be Handy Smurf?
I don't think so.
I mean,
so.
Handy Doctor.
I think it will be.
I think it definitely will be.
I think it will not. Here's my reasoning for that. Because that story's done. We've ended it. We've sealed them off in their own little universe.
That's why.
She's got him. They've got that whole spin-off. It is fan fiction nirvana over there for all these people that want to write slash fiction with the Doctor and Rose. Go nuts. There it is. It's all in that separate universe, and we're not going to revisit it because we had to burn out a star last time. We're done. Leave it as a pocket universe. There is absolutely no reason in my mind you couldn't just pick them up out of their time stream at some point in time during 10th Doctor and Rose Adventures. They don't have to be squabbling. They don't have to be in love with each other or whatever is going on. It just has to be, you know, one of those things when she mentions to Mickey, we went to the snow planet. Okay, maybe we'll get to see that adventure. I don't care, but it just pick them up, put them out there. I don't want it.
See,
I don't want it to
that
be.
Worked. That sort of thing worked in Classic Who because we let it work in Classic Who. But there is a more sophisticated fan base out there now. But
there are so many novels that are supposed to take place in those times anyways.
Okay, but here's my point is if that's the case, it worked back in the day because we just kind of retroactively fixed it. But there is no knowledge unless you erase the memory of the things that happened in the events that are going to happen in the 50th anniversary, Rose or Ten never have any sort of foreknowledge that there's going to be a regeneration. Rose would, if she met a future generation of the 10th Doctor, that would have affected her in some way, because Ten is really kind of the guy who, exactly. I mean, it just, it doesn't work from a timeline perspective. It doesn't work from a very good storytelling perspective that she would have met a future version of the man she essentially comes to love.
From Rose's point of view.
Right, from Rose's point of view.
Now, that's just
Ten knows that he's going to return.
That's just
but that's what I'm saying. You
she
can't
doesn't
work
have to know.
In.
Yes, you can. She does not have to know.
She doesn't have to know that 10 is the Doctor? I don't think that this is going
to
work.
Or
11
is the
Doctor. No, I'm sorry. Is that 11 is the Doctor?
They just said they're going to be in it.
It's painfully obvious.
They just said they're going to be in it. It doesn't have...
See, you're trying to make it work.
No, I'm not trying to make it work. I'm saying there... How many... Okay, go back to the five Doctors, which at this point is the largest conglomeration of companions and Doctors.
And there's huge issues.
And there's only one scene where they all come together.
Yes, but there's huge issues with it. And that's just it. That's already been done before, so you can't turn around and do that again, because you're going to feel like it's cheating by saying, well, she just sees him one time, and that's what they did in the Five Doctors, but they already did that in the Five Doctors. So, I mean, that's why I think it will be somehow...
But everything they did in the Five Doctors was done
somehow
earlier in the
handy,
Three Doctors.
Somehow, I mean, exactly. That's why I don't see them doing that vehicle again.
No, I disagree. I think that's the whole reason for doing
handy,
it, is because it's an anniversary episode, and because it's what the fans expect.
It'll be Handy and Rose, and it
for
works.
A multi-doctor
that's
story.
Just it. It works because you don't have to do the traditional pluck the Doctor out of time, crossing the time streams. You now have two existing parallel Doctors, and you can do that and bring them back over into this universe and have that work. To me, that's the easiest and more logical.
Billy Piper is going to be in it. They didn't say they're going to be playing Rose in the
Ten.
That's true.
I'll give you that.
I'm not expecting Ten Rose to show up.
But
I don't care what they say until they say it's these
people. Well, let's go on the presumption that it's Ten and Rose, because we're all doing that. Everybody's doing that. You're right. They haven't said it, so we just need to wait until we see what it is.
As I'm approaching everything in the 50th.
But that being said, if you go in presuming it's Ten and Rose, I think it's Handy and Rose. So I love how I never would have called him Handy if Keith had never said
it. I'm going to reserve judgment, although, while I don't want it to happen, you're probably right.
See, I'm kind of the same way.
Just from the standpoint of where the rest of the season is going.
I prefer your way, but yeah, it just...
I won't say any more, but based on where we might be going, I have a theory.
So that was the big news, and we want to know what you think. We've had some posts on our Facebook page, but we still want to hear more, so keep them coming.
The sad thing is, I was still in bed, and Sarah came in and woke me up and was like, BBC just announced that David Tennant and Billy Piper are coming back for the 50th.
My text didn't wake you up?
No, my phone was on vibrate. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
I heard from you 2 hours later. I never heard from Sean.
And then later that day, we get back from everything we've done. I hop on the computer. I'm like, John Hurt's going to be in the episode, too? I was more excited about John Hurt being in the episode than David Tennant and Billy Piper, because I expected them to come back.
Well, that's just it. It's a big reveal, and of course, all the fangirls went nuts, and it's kind of like, duh.
You know, I did the same thing when I saw that. I was like, that really wasn't that big of a surprise.
It really isn't.
Billy Piper maybe was a little more than David Tennant was.
Yeah, because Tennant's been saying, I've got my suit pressed and ready. Let's do this.
Right.
Is it sad?
Now, when they announce 9 and 8 in the next couple of weeks, that'll be awesome.
Is it maybe? I don't know. I was so devastated in Army of Ghosts Doomsday when Rose left. I mean, I was crushed, because that was just an emotional... I sobbed. It was a big deal. Just because it was sad. Not necessarily because, oh my God, Rose is leaving. But just, it was sad. And then they brought her back for what I still feel is kind of a lackluster reappearance of Rose. And so now the fact that Rose is coming back again, and it's like, I mean, is it sad that I'm excited about David Tennant coming back, if he's coming back as a Doctor? I really could care less if Rose was in the episode.
When Rose showed back up in the fourth series, I was in awe. I thought that was awesome. I loved it. It's so wonderful. I'm the same way with this. I'm like, do I really need Rose to come back yet again? I mean, I already had that.
It was awesome when it was this ghostly apparition of Rose continuing to show up, and then we got Turn Left, which really kind of explained it. I was like, okay, sweet. And then, well, everybody comes back. And it's like, okay, cool. But she spends so much of the episode not with David Tennant that it really became a, eh. You know, they get this one scene together where they're, and the scenes that they are together, they're trapped in separate force fields. So how exciting is that? True. I mean, nothing's going on there. And then we all ride home on the TARDIS, and that's just a big fanboy. Everybody's excited because, look, there's everybody. That's cool.
Right.
Yeah. So there wasn't a reason for her to be there. It just didn't really. And then we kind of got the big emotional rip at the end, which tied up Handy's story arc, which, okay, I'm more excited for the fact that he got his
happily
ever after with her. We
didn't have to tandem Handy's story arc because he was just invented for that two-parter.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
It wasn't like you needed to.
Well, I mean, he was there for her story arc. Yeah. And it's like, okay, we're done with that. I mean, at the time it was cool. Looking back, it's kind of worn on me a little bit that I'm just not excited about it. So now Rose is coming back again, and it's like, I don't care. If Donna was coming back, I'd be more excited because I'd be worried about her.
I told
her brain's going to melt. You know?
This made me think of this because I'm about to launch into something else here, but Caitlin and I watched Doctor Who the movie tonight too, by the way.
Oh.
I don't know why I told her. That's the most recent thing I've done today, and I forgot about that. Yeah, so
you watched Doctor Who the movie today?
Yeah, because I was preparing Caitlin for next weekend, because she won't be available Friday night.
She's not going to stay up late.
No,
huh?
I can't keep. Not if we're going to Comic-Con the next day. I may not be staying up late if I'm going to Comic-Con the next day. But anyway, no, my thought is 7, 8, and 9 now will be the only three Doctors not in a multi-Doctor story. Now, you can't count the movie because it is Sylvester, but it's a regeneration.
It's
not a multi-Doctor the timeline,
story.
Right. So, so 7, 8, and 9. So, I think let's just fix that and let's bring 7, 8, and 9 back in because Sylvester's
five Doctors
not really outgrown his look. I think you could. I think you could pull him off, especially the way he looks in the movie. He's quite a bit older. If you look at him now, he's a lot older. But if you kind of did the hair, you could still match him with his.
If you wardrobed him the same,
you
could match him like he was
absolutely.
In Doctor Who the movie.
Absolutely. And same thing with
now.
McGann.
When you say not
McGann
in a multi-Doctor story, I'm assuming that you're discounting Dimensions in Time.
Yes, I'm not counting
Dimensions. Just want to clarify. Somebody out there who's listening, going, "Hey, what about Dimensions in Time?" So I'm nipping that in the bud. We're not counting it.
I tried to count it last time. You guys wouldn't let me, so
that's why I was clarifying because I wasn't going to let you if you were counting.
So they they're the only ones that haven't been in a multi-Doctor story. So let's fix that and bring them into this as well. I'd love to see 7 come back, wouldn't you? Before Galley, I might not be saying that, but I like Sylvester. All right,
I think it'll be much easier.
Let's move on to feedback.
I think it'll be much easier to see a 9, 10, 11 story.
Yeah, I think so too.
But it would be fun and interesting and cool and amazing and fantastic. And
I think 9, 10, 11 story would make a lot of people mad. Not me, but a lot of people.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? Just because there's no classic.
Yeah, that's there. In fact, if you go to Reddit, there's a lot of people out there that are miffed that if that happens, it just goes on to perpetuate the idea that the new series and the classic series are just two different things that they can't coincide. That that all that anybody in the new production of Doctor Who cares about is the new series. If you do 9, 10, and 11 and do a multi-Doctor story there, I see the point. I see the point. I don't necessarily subscribe to it, but I can't fault them for feeling that way.
I could see them feeling that way if there weren't as many references or as many times as we've seen just images of past Doctors.
I know, but that's the problem. They're saying we've never gotten that tangible bridge. And by bringing a classic Doctor in, with the exception of Time Crash, but that's even its own kind of separate entity because it's
Sarah Jane
it's
and
Western.
K-9 aren't enough of a
well
yeah really that's
they,
tangible
they want that tangible Doctor bridge
I think they're
want.
Not going to be happy unless we dig
no.
William Hartnell out of the grave and reanimate him they're not
that's
just not going to be happy
true, but I do kind of see the point.
What about Filch? Somebody.
I'm telling you. I'm now that I've seen pictures of him, I am so ready. I want to see this special, and see how he pulls off acting as the character. I'd love to see a clip before I said, "Yeah, let's do it." But yeah, I don't know.
Somebody was it Nick Briggs or Burnaby Edwards?
Richard Herndon again, if you do it. But
Nick Briggs or Burnaby Edwards. One of them had this ask on Facebook event that Big Finish ran, and he wound up getting like 300 questions, and he tried to mow through, you know, as many of them as he could that he was answering. And somebody asked him, would you consider having, you know, David Bradley in a Big Finish as the first Doctor? And he says, absolutely. He says, we've been trying to get him on board in any capacity.
What? He said, we've been a Big Finish audio?
In a Big Finish audio.
So he sounds that much like?
That's what, apparently this, whichever Nick it is.
Let's do it, because all we have to find now is a Pertwee. Yeah. Sound alike. Yeah. Because like, we've got a Troughton sound alike.
They just need to get him to
go Frazier.
Call Frazier.
But yeah, he said they've been trying to get him for any capacity, but he said absolutely we consider that if he's willing to come work with us. So
wow. So if they believe he's got the sound and mannerisms, then.
Yeah. I don't know. That lends a lot of stock in my book.
Maybe they already have gotten him on board to record a certain 50th anniversary that's coming out, and they're just kind of
maybe he's in line at the end.
They're playing to the. Yeah, we'd like to see him come on board. We just, you know, we've been trying to get him. We've got him for a second. No, we can't say that. Oh, we've been trying. We've been working with him. Because who just says that? Well, we've been trying.
George Lucas. They're all in the movie.
I don't think I was supposed to say that. Let's do it then. All right. Frazier and. Now, well, we just got to find a Pertwee sound alike. I'm all for it. All right. Let's move on to feedback.
The Doctor's found Clara again. He's got no need to pout unless the great intelligence steals her mind. There's a battle ahead against evil Wi-Fi. Hope we never see the end of the road while we're traveling with him. Hey now, Doctor Who's back on. Hey now, in the bell of St. John, let it come. You wrote feedback about it, and we're gonna read it now.
Oh, you faded out. Nice.
I've been practicing. Nice.
Most of you just kind of.
Well.
And Sarah applauds in the background.
Thank you.
First up is Holly. She says, the bells of St. John. Hey, guys. First off, happy Easter, everyone.
Thank you.
Happy Easter, Holly.
What a start to Series 7B. The opening scenes in the monastery reminded me a bit of the Meddling Monk. I have to say that I really like the Doctor's new outfit. Love seeing the protective side of the Doctor. He really wants to make sure that Clara stays safe and wants to unravel the mystery of who she is, who she really is, and why she keeps showing up. Mrs. Kislet. I've never seen her name spelled out.
Kislet
was rather the interesting henchwoman. The great intelligence shows up yet again. I'm getting the sneaky suspicion that they may play a big part in the upcoming episodes. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts on this episode, Holly from Wisconsin.
I got a sneaky suspicion that they were going to have be playing. Well, at least the Great Intelligence was going to be playing more in this season. I think I said.
I think you may have.
I did chuckle when you guys watched Impossible Astronaut the other night. And who was it that said, hey, remember when Glenn figured out the whole Riversong thing from this one episode?
Colton.
He was Colton.
Colton's still going on about
it. I remember that. Hope I didn't ruin anybody's season.
Well, I did turn to Sean after we watched the episode, and that was a spoiler. The Facebook message.
Yeah. Which we didn't talk about last week.
No, I didn't think
after I gave you
I didn't think we'd bring it up.
I meant to, but
I figured we'd talk about it this way.
If nobody knows, Sean put it on our Facebook page, but they actually, the BBC screwed up on their cast list for the website. It said Richard E. Grant. So,
yeah, that was something that I saw, and it was posted, but in where I found it, it didn't indicate in any way spoilers.
Except for the name of the article.
Where the link didn't take me to the top of the page that was. It took me to the...
If you didn't have to scroll through everything else.
Yeah. So I just read it and I posted it and I didn't think much of it. And I put a spoiler warning on it.
You did. He put a spoiler warning.
Just in case.
I just was surprised that you did it because you're so anti-spoiler and don't want to spoil yourself and that kind of stuff that I was surprised that you put it on there. Even though you put spoiler warning in it, and I commend you for that. I was just surprised you even did that.
Well, just because I thought it was cool. Richard E. Grant's coming back.
You just wanted to prove that I was right.
Yeah, I was that excited for you. Yeah, we got.
Yeah, he might have missed the April or the March 30th thing, but he got this one right.
Well, I had to give you one. So, and then he showed up, and it was like, oh, there he is. Oh, wait a minute.
And that's the thing because as soon as they started talking clients, I thought, oh.
Is it ruined that early for you?
It was ruined that early. Once I realized, oh, they're working for somebody. This woman's not the main bad guy. She's a henchman. I was like, oh, that's where this is going.
I'll be honest. I knew that too, but it wasn't until I actually saw Richard E. Grant in the little video that I was like, oh, that relates to that spoiler. Damn it, I knew that. You know, so that's when it kicked in.
So you put two and two that it was the great intelligence, but not two and two that the great intelligence would be Richard E. Grant.
Yeah, which is weird.
Quite frankly, when I sit back after we watched The Snowman that I thought we'd see more of the great intelligence this season, I didn't think it would be Richard E. Grant.
Yeah.
Well, we debated with you whether or not it was going to be Ian McKellen.
Yeah.
Because Keith and I were both bound and determined to get Ian McKellen back, and apparently not. He's just the snowman. So.
All right.
Who's next?
Next up is Chrissy.
Chrissy writes, I don't tell the future, I just work here. Dear Vortex Boys, I'm going to say this once. If you ask Daphne Ashbrook about rain gutters when you interview her, my Vortex tangent alarm will go off and I will teleport to Tan City and throw something at you. Beyond that, have fun at Planet Comic Con and tell Daphne hi from me.
So that's how we get Chrissy to come visit.
Hey, Daphne.
Rain gutters.
Achievement unlocked. Challenge accepted.
Well, if she throws things at me as hard as she hits, then I'm scared.
On David Tennant and Billy Piper in the 50th. Big capital letters here. Well, it's about time, BBC. We finally got some casting news about the 50th anniversary special. At this point, I don't really care if David Tennant's actually playing the Doctor or if it's Handy Doctor. Although that would be a really stupid thing to do for an anniversary special.
That's a good point.
Thank you, Chrissy.
It really isn't very anniversary specially to have it be Handy, but okay.
I'm just glad they finally saw fit to announce any kind of news. Personally, I'm sure there are going to be more announcements in the near future. Yeah. I figure if they announced David and Billy, because that bit of casting wouldn't be that big of a surprise.
And it leaked early.
I think maybe they have more people signed on, but want to save the really big surprises for much later.
Well, here's the thing is, they said they're starting to shoot next week. Did I read that right? Or the week after?
Next month.
Next
month. Sometime.
Okay.
Sometime in April.
So that's coming up soon. So people are going to start seeing. I mean, there's people that show up to these sets all the time now. Some people are going to start seeing cast members. So I think that she's right. I think over the course of the next several weeks, we're going to start getting some casting information because
I don't know. Look at Clara in Asylum. I know that was a lot of studio.
It was all studio. And they already announced that she was going to be the next companion. So people that would have showed up to shoots wouldn't have known. They would have thought, well, that she's the new companion, but not necessarily known what episode they were shooting is the point.
I suppose there's that.
They're never together with Amy and Rory, so. But I'd really like she was in a room the whole time. There was no way that one was going to leak.
I'd really like to see a Doctor Who episode called Blue Harvest. Because I think that's the level we're going to have to get to at this point.
I remember hearing an interview with Ned McIntosh about them bringing back the Silurians and how much secrecy they went through in order to, and nobody knew until they announced it.
I did.
You did?
Because of that stupid Today interview. Remember what I told you about that? How Meredith Vieira ruined that whole. Yeah, she went over there and did a thing.
For season five?
Here's the deal. Here's the deal.
No. I'm talking about
season five.
Oh.
When they rebooted the Silurians.
Oh, the Silurians actually coming back. Well, that's true. I thought you were talking about when everybody came back for the Wedding of River Song.
Yeah, no. The actual reintroduction.
That one was that one.
Well, that's actually. See, I did talk about it, but you didn't let us know what was spoiled because at the time
I didn't want to spoil you guys.
No, I don't think you ever went back and revisited it. So that was it. It was the
Silurian. Well, it was the Silurian. It was Churchill, and it was a Cybermen.
Oh.
They showed clips of all of that, and I went, "Are you kidding me?" Now I didn't know in what capacity everything was going to be playing.
Didn't know how small of a role that
it'll be. Exactly. So.
But my point is just that it's still possible that they could film it and keep the actors secret so that we won't know until they're ready.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. Here's my reasoning behind that, Keith, though, is if it was a studio shoot episode, they could easily do it. This is the 50th anniversary special. There's going to be stuff shot outside. There's no way you're going to keep those sets that closed. Well, no way you'll do it.
Somehow they did it for Hungry Earth Cold Blood.
Well,
some of that was shot outside too.
I was going to say, I'll give them that one. I'll give them that one, except for none of the Silurian scenes are shot outside.
Yeah, but they still got to go outside.
It's all underground. No, the Silurians didn't ever have to go outside. The one gal is out in that courtyard.
She talked about having to have black coverings over her going from car to studio.
Well, yeah, that was more from, I'm in the makeup department and I have to leave you over here.
Yeah, and that's going from one trailer to the
They went to that extent to cover
up the look. That I can see happening, but when you see Billy Piper and David Tennant leaving a set, you're going to know it. They're not going to be able to hide them.
Well, yeah, because they've announced them. Anybody that they're not announcing, I'm saying they might try to hide them.
That's why they've announced them this early. It's because the people are going to start seeing that.
Here's how they get around it. We're going to put all of the actors in Quark's outfits.
Yes.
And we'll march them back and forth. Anytime they have to go outside anywhere.
And everybody will say, ooh, the Quarks are going to be in the 50th anniversary. And the Quarks won't be anywhere. But we'll have all kinds of surprise actors.
Chrissy continues, I also have a theory that the BBC has given everyone express instructions to deny any kind of involvement until the BBC makes it official. Maybe that's a bit off the rails, but it's really hard to keep secrets like this unless it's written out in a contract or something. Anyway, hooray, 50th anniversary news.
I really kind of mulled over. You know, I was pretty adamant that Barrowman is not going to be in the 50th. I guess I was saying that last week because of that tweet. And then I sort of thought about it, and I thought, but if you did make a deal and you signed a contract that says you have to deny that you're in the 50th,
that lets you off the hook.
Until we say something, that lets you off the hook. So you deny it. You flat out say, I'm not in the 50th now. So it still could be up in the air. It still could be there. Anything's possible.
I still go by my stance of until I see the episode, I'm taking it all with a grain of salt.
Until the BBC says this, this, and this.
No, I'm still taking it all with a grain of salt.
Would you really? If they said, so you don't even know that Billy, you don't even believe Billy David will be in it until you see them in the episode.
I believe they'll be in it. I'm not believing they're going to be Rose and the Doctor.
No, they didn't say they were going to be Rose and the Doctor.
That's why everyone's assuming.
That's what I'm saying is you just said until you see them in the episode, you won't believe that anybody's in it.
Except whoever BBC says is in it, I will believe the actor is in it.
Okay,
I will not believe the character they are until I see it.
All right, that makes sense.
Unless they announce who the character is.
Well, see, that's just it, though. Quite honestly, even being in it for me doesn't necessarily quantify anything because it's like you could use a clip.
Yeah, but they wouldn't make an announcement for that.
Make an announcement. And if they did say Billy and David were in it, and then they were in clips, that would so piss
people
off.
But that's one of those things. They didn't announce
that would
it
be a
for
pure nightmare there.
They didn't announce it for Let's Kill Hitler. That
but the holograms were
the
gonna
holograms
be in
were going to be in it. It was just kind of one of those. Oh, cool.
Yeah,
but
so
what's the point?
Why?
That's just it. I'm kind of with Keith. I don't put anything past anybody at this point. They could be throwing misinformation after misinformation after misinformation.
No, I fully believe that David Tennant and Billy Piper will be in this episode, or because they told us
but
that.
But Sean thinks it could be Cliff.
Sure.
Yes. And that would be the biggest PR nightmare.
It would be.
Ever.
I thought
if you release that,
I thought Richard E. Grant was going to be a flashback. So. Now, I will say this, though.
You don't list it on a page, though, when they're going to be a
Keith, I'm going to say I admire your tenacity, and I believe that you will do this, but not to the episode. You are only going to make it until the trailer to the episode comes out.
That's footage of the episode.
You will have lost it at that point, and you will have watched it 9 million times going, oh, well, look, Oh, look. That's what'll happen.
I'll give him that. I kind of assumed he meant when he sees a trailer for it.
When I see footage of some sort or...
Footage.
Who knows if these actors will even be featured in the trailer.
That's true. We could get one of those really stylistic black words, drums, the TARDIS, the 50th anniversary special's coming, and we'll all go, no, it was a teaser trailer.
All right, I started just down this road. Let's get back off this road.
Shame on you. Review for the Bells of St. John. I loved this episode. It's strange that we're technically in the middle of Series 7, but that it feels almost like a complete reboot of the show. And I'm not just talking about the credit sequence, although I'll get to that in a minute. The feel of the show is different. It might be the music, or the camera work, or the storytelling. Could be the change in companion. Whatever it is, it feels like I'm watching something completely brand new. I love Clara, and I love how she and the Doctor are just going a mile a minute, but I can still keep up with what's going on. She reminds me a lot of Donna. She doesn't need an episode or two to get her feet underneath her before she's toppling out of the TARDIS and into a crashing airplane after the Doctor. And did you notice she never spilled her tea that entire time? She's taking everything in stride, but still working things out for herself. I think she's going to be a fantastic regular companion, even after the great mystery of Clara Oswald is solved, and she's done being a plot device. Other things I loved. The Bells of St. John actually refers to the St. John ambulance sticker on the TARDIS. That's one of those, well, duh, moments that I should have seen coming, but didn't. The Great Intelligence is back, as well as UNIT. I kept looking for Kate Stewart, but maybe she'll show up another time? Kind of hope so, I really liked her. Summer Falls by Amelia Williams. Also, Chapter 11 will make you cry. I saw that they're actually releasing that as an ebook, and I want it. The Doctor dropping the old tweed coat and going with the longer purple coat.
Well, now Chapter 11 has to make you cry.
Better. Huh. I love the new outfit, personally. I know Keith is going to have something to say about that. Matt Smith looks really great in the long coat. There was even a shot where the lighting made it look like the coat and the TARDIS matched. It was when the Doctor was outside Clara's house working with the Spoonhead robot, and the lighting was a little darker. As well as the appearance of a fez, although it quickly got discarded with the tweed jacket. But the Doctor keeps his bow tie in a nice box.
And pre-tied.
Did anyone else think the meddling monk when they called the Doctor the Mad Monk at the beginning? I don't think that the meddling monk would actually show up, but that part of me just made me think of Time Meddler. Maybe I'm just looking for little shout-outs to Classic Who, but I wonder if these aren't going to be those little nuggets or callbacks peppered throughout the season just as Easter eggs for those of us who know where to find them. One question, though. If you see a Wi-Fi name written in an alien language, shouldn't that be a clue that something freaky's going on? Why would you willingly click on something like that? Seems a bit strange for the Great Intelligence to slip up on something so mundane. You know, Chrissy, I thought about that myself watching the episode and then realized that, you know, when you're out and about and you're in a pinch and you can't get on Wi-Fi where it's, you know, public and free and you happen to see somebody who isn't
secured.
Locked down and secured. Yeah, well, I'll just leave it at that.
Well, one of the people we watched the episode
when I saw
what 24-year-old doesn't know what the internet, how to access the internet.
When I saw that, I didn't think alien language. I thought dingbats or whatever.
Yeah,
you know, they've always got the wingdings. That's what it is. Dingbats. That was Edith on Archie Bunker. Wing.
Yeah. Not dingbats, you dingbat. Wingdings. Credit sequence. Okay, lots of people have been talking about how the new credits feels like a blend of the different credits for Classic Who. I think even the music was different from the credits from The Snowmen. It put me in mind of a blend between the Eighth Doctor Big Finish Open theme, the one from Charlie Stories, and the theme from the Trial of the Time Lord season. There's a lot of synthesizer-type sounds, but also a deeper resonance to it that still makes it fit in New Who. Sorry if I'm getting all these technical terms wrong. I'm not Dr. Phil. The colors are definitely evocative of...
She just described them the way we would have said.
Yeah. we're with you. The colors are definitely evocative of the Third Doctor's era. Plus, the spacescapes remind me of the Starfield from the 80s. And there's a really quick bubble that actually looks grayscale for a while before it swoops off to the next segment. I know you all talked about the credits back when you reviewed The Snowman, but I thought there were more differences even here, and I loved all of it. That's it out of me. Enjoy Planet Comic-Con this weekend. Chrissy.
I'll just say about the credits, which we'll probably talk about again, but I agree with her. No, there's no faces.
Face.
I agree with her that it felt different this time, even from The Snowman. So
I think it was the music.
Look and sound, yeah.
I didn't think the look looked different.
You don't?
No, it's just the music.
Although Colton pointed out the inaccuracy that the doors to the TARDIS open inwards when it flies up to the thing and they go this way.
But no, it opens outward. In the graphic, it opens outward.
But then in the show, they go in.
Yeah, but remember...
Well, of course, the doctor does
they
wrong.
Open both ways.
Yeah, and doctor's wife, she says they're supposed to open outwards.
I would just... Anything else on Chrissy's review here that we want to touch on?
We're going
to talk
a little bit about it later. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Chrissy.
All right. Our next bit of feedback comes from Michelle. Michelle writes, I blame Jamie for this. Hey, guys.
Words around here, Michelle.
Let me explain. In The Web of Fear, the last time the Doctor encountered the Great Intelligence before the Christmas special, he was planning to defeat it by mind-melding with it and absorbing its knowledge. Jamie did not realize this and thought the opposite would happen, that the Great Intelligence would absorb the Doctor and led an attack on the robot, Yeti, breaking the intelligence concentration and causing it to flee. Oh, great. I was just about to start this, and I don't need to. This is probably also about the
spoilers.
This is probably also about the time I sought out Miss Kislet as a child and melded... Oh, I'm sorry. This is probably about the time it sought out Miss Kislet as a child and melded with her instead... Ooh, that is so cool. I'm so starting this tomorrow. That's so awesome.
So that means The Web of Fear takes place after the snowman.
It takes place in the... It does, and it takes place in the 1960s. It's one of those real... Or maybe they said 70s. I can't remember. It's one of those near real time, or at least it's a unit story as well. So units at least in existence at the time. Ooh! Because from what I remember of it, it's set in London. It is set in... What would have been that era when Miss Kislet would have been a child?
So the chronology of the Great Intelligence goes snowmen, abominable snowmen.
No.
Web of Fear.
Web of Fear.
Downtime, I'm assuming.
Downtime, and then...
Bells of St. John.
Bells of St. John.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
And it's been on Earth the whole time.
Okay. Remind me to say something... about Abominable Snowmen when we get into the review. Because there's another thing that sort of ties in. That's why I was saying it really opened my mind about some of the ways they could connect. But anyway, okay. I'll go on. She also writes, also, who do you think was the woman in the shop who gave Clara the doctor's number? My money is on River. That was my first thought. But I've also heard Sally Sparrow. Ooh, that's a good one. And Rose as possibilities. Thoughts? Michelle. Very good.
Maybe... I'd say River.
I think it will ultimately be River since, spoilers, we know that River is going to show back up.
But Rose worked in a shop. And we know Rose is going to show up.
I like Sally Sparrow. That would be incredible because that's a Moffat. Let's put it this way. If Moffat is about to make his departure... I don't think he's going to make his departure on the 50th. I don't think he's even going to do it. But if he's wrapping things up, I think he's going to want to revisit some of the groundwork he's laid in the series. That's why I don't rule out Captain Jack coming back, because that's his baby. It's his character. And Sally Sparrow is another one of his characters. So why not at the very least, do a cameo with Sally, and she is the one in the shop, and somehow plays into it later as well. Why not? If you're going to lay that groundwork to kind of... make, you know, just a look back over his entire span of what he's contributed to Doctor Who, I wouldn't rule it out. I think that's a fair assessment. And it could be Rose, because we now know that Rose is coming back in the 50th, so the 50th might tie into this season somehow as well. 50th anniversary special.
That also would make sense.
Yeah. So anyway, no, if anybody else that we think it could have been in the shop?
Captain Jack. Dressed as a woman.
My gut feeling is it's River, but could be anybody else.
Ooh, what if it's one of Amy and Rory's kids?
Well, they have a son.
At least
dressed as a woman.
Or it could be a grandchild.
Well, I guess it would be Amy and Rory's kid if it's River.
Could be a grandchild. That's true. I guess we do know they have at least two kids now, don't we?
I hadn't thought of that.
Could be a grandchild. Could be Susan.
What if it was Kate Stewart?
Ooh. Susan in a shop.
Susan, I called that she'd have last
to,
year.
She'd have had to get there, though, somehow, because she's in the future. She was left off in 2065. Yeah.
Well, Handy's going to show up and bring her back in his TARDIS.
Yeah, because according to the deleted scene, he grew another TARDIS because he left a piece of the coral.
Yeah. There.
Hey, let's get in and review this episode because I really want to talk about this.
Dun, dun, dun.
No synopsis. No synopsis.
Do we ever have synopses? Synopsis?
We don't.
Not usually. I think the first half we did because you had your iTunes synopses.
Oh, I think you're right. I probably still do, but that's all right.
Yeah. Okay, so there's this evil Wi-Fi, and the companion comes back, and an airplane crash that doesn't happen.
Almost happens.
And then he rides the bicycle up a building.
Motorcycle.
And there's robots.
But not the quadricycle.
And he invents a quadricycle. That's so many little, nice, fantastic moments in that. When he talks about all the different things he did while she was sleeping. Oh, and I fixed the quadricycle.
Very much harkening back to
Power of Three. Yeah.
I fixed the quadricycle in the garage. No, I don't think you do. We don't have one of those. I invented the quadricycle.
So who wants to see that now?
Oh, yes.
BBC, when is the toy of the quadricycle coming out? Because I want to put my Matt Smith action figure on it.
Let's kind of start at the beginning.
Yeah.
And let's talk about the monk stuff. What did you guys think of that? And the bells of St. John.
Well, my first inclination was when they were running down in to find somebody. My first thought was, I bet this is where the doctor is now and he's hiding. But when they first started talking to the character, the doctor, I kept thinking, wait, are we going with a meddling monk thing here? Because we have already done the great intelligence in the last one. I wondered how much more Moffat thought he might cleverly mine out of this. And even if it was just going to be a cameo of the meddling monk, because, hey, we're in the 50th anniversary year, let's just put some little fun little things in here, even if we don't go anywhere with them. And so maybe it was a little hopeful thinking that, oh, maybe this is the meddling monk. So I wasn't surprised when he pulled the hood down and it was the doctor. I thought, okay, well, that was my first inclination.
It's a nice homage, though.
It sort of was. Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely.
It's one of those.
And maybe that's the intent.
Fanboy, oh, that'd be cool, but plot-wise doesn't make a lick of sense because then we'd have to deal with the whole you're not the last Time Lord.
Right.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. I don't think anybody was ready to go there yet.
Right. As soon as they said the bells of St. John are ringing, and then you heard the phone, I absolutely knew it was the TARDIS phone ringing.
Well, the same thing.
Which is so cool, because the last time that's happened was in Moffat's first story, Empty Child.
Empty Child, yeah.
And I love how he's got the extender.
That's not supposed
to happen. Yeah. the extender cord on the.
Did you like that? I thought that was a little camp, but
it was a little
I was
camp,
okay with
but
it, but I thought it was a little camp.
It was not any more camp than the.
He walked out and then walked around the one monk and ended up wrapping him up in it.
It was not any more camp than the idea of a car alarm on the TARDIS. Which, again, it's kind of the borderline camp, but.
I thought that was a little too camp, too.
It's in that same vein for me, but I thought it was funny, so I'll allow it.
See, sometimes something for the sake of humor though doesn't always work, and that was one of those ones that
it's like driving with the parking brakes on. It's kind of one of those. Okay, it was a great line, and it totally explains it. But you're telling me every TARDIS in the history of the show has had the parking brakes on.
You're going to have to throw that one out. But this is more of a visual reference, and they're going for the slapstick there. And I thought that was just overreaching a little bit. But I was okay with it. I was fine. It didn't take me out of the story or anything. You commented about Clara not knowing anything about the internet.
Yeah, and I didn't think about that, but because we watched it as a group. And one of the people was like, she's 24 years old and doesn't know anything about the internet?
But doesn't the doctor sort of, he even ponders that later.
Yeah.
How do you not know anything about the internet? Because it's when
she finally does know everything about the internet. And it's a plot device that was almost too stretched too far.
I'm not plugged in, by the way.
Hmm? Oh, is it not on?
You're now running on reserve battery power. No, it's not on now.
Is it plugged into the wall? Oh.
It was. I don't know what happened.
Now flip it. There we go.
There it goes. Okay. Now we have power.
Hey, my screen just got a lot brighter.
Yeah, mine boiled it up too a little bit. So, yeah, we apologize for the technical difficulties. We weren't plugged into the power.
But it was kind of like one of those. I understood it for the plot aspect, but when you stop and think about it, it's like that doesn't really. How many people are really like that?
I guess until you said that, I didn't get so much that she really didn't understand about the internet. That maybe she just didn't quite understand the connecting to the internet. Maybe you live in an environment for so long where your dad has programmed your phone and programmed your Wi-Fi, and so she knows what the internet is. She knows how to get, you know, go to the internet. But suddenly, when you go someplace where you're not connected to the internet, you don't know how to get there. So suddenly, you're like, "Where's the internet?" The internet has always been there all your life.
I would be able to swallow that easier if it weren't where she lives.
Well, but
she lives in this house.
Yeah, but it sounds like the internet got like knocked off, and then they were all having to reconnect to the internet.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, she had been on the internet, but suddenly she's not.
But she's also the internet. It's her house from the standpoint that.
But she's been there for a year.
If I moved in with you,
but how many times have we come over here and got knocked off your internet?
And how many times do we have to go to you and say, "Can you fix it?"
So if I've always gone and gotten on the internet.
Yeah.
And then suddenly I can't get on the internet, didn't know that you really have to connect because that's always happened for me. I totally bought that. It's a small potatoes argument.
I can see where, as someone of her age group, I can see where it's a little bit wonky. But at the same time, I can also see maybe this is Moffat's very sly commentary on the idea of taking something for granted. Because especially when she's on the phone and she asks the doctor, "Isn't it the internet? Or where's the internet? Shouldn't it just, you know, be there?" Because that's kind of, I think,
right.
I think there are probably a generation of kids coming up that just kind of assume that
the internet's just there.
It's there. Yeah. You know?
They've never not been without Wi-Fi.
And, like you said, it's for the narrative. It's for the plot. It's the contrast to the fact that the first time we met Clara, she was already this computer genius. She was hacking through the Daleks' entire network. And
which,
she was helping
was
them
nice
get through the
little setup.
So
in this,
now, yeah, when
we
you
know
come to
how
this,
she gets that kind of.
Well,
or
we don't know for sure.
We don't know.
And I
but,
won't know
but,
until
but
I see that episode.
But it's hinted that that's how she knew how to do that in Asylum is because she, of what got uploaded to her brain during this.
I didn't know that it was hinted to that either.
I got like a little, okay, kind of thing, that's a nice little reference to now she's as smart as the first time we saw her.
Hmm.
Maybe more of a reference.
I didn't get that. I got the.
It's the allegories too, or the illusions.
I think
drawn.
It's an allegory.
The narrative.
But I don't know that it was
between,
a connection to
between
the fact
her being
that
a nanny
that's why she's
and being a nanny.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I think it was allegories. I don't think it was a connection.
Maybe that's what I mean. More.
Okay.
Than
so you don't, yes, you, you don't think then that this is Clara before she becomes a technological genius? And
nothing in this episode led me to believe. Nothing I have seen so far has led me to believe that there is a direct connection between that Clara and that Clara. There's some sort of at least allegory or metaphysical connection there.
Yes.
Until
we learn more.
Like the Wi-Fi password being
run
by Clara Boy.
Exactly.
Yeah. I wonder how many people are going to have that as their Wi-Fi password now.
We should start trying it.
I'm going to.
Especially if it's like Wingdings.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. let's talk about the wardrobe real briefly.
I don't like the fact that it's crammed into a cupboard under the pedestal of the console.
I get the impression that that's not the wardrobe.
That's his personal stash of clothes.
I think that's kind of
that's
maybe a special memento for the 11th Doctor's stash. Is kind of the impression I get.
Maybe.
There's a wardrobe room still somewhere in this TARDIS.
Yeah.
But this is a, I'm going to go get something.
I need to change real quick.
Yeah, or this is something I've set aside that I personally like. This isn't a go in and find my new self by going through the entire wardrobe. This is a, I have grabbed a dozen clothes that I really like best. And I've taken them out, put them where I can have access to them easily.
David Tennant would have had the brown suit.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. That's where he changes out. That's like his wardrobe there.
This is where Uncle Sam had the green and red shirts.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's still a wardrobe room somewhere, but these are the ones that he changes between. And the black shoes and the red shoes.
I don't know about anybody else.
You mean the red and the white?
I was really...
Did part of you die inside when he threw away the tweed jacket?
No.
Oh.
No, I was totally okay with that because I love the purple.
I love the purple, but part of me was just like, oh, goodbye.
I love...
Part of you was going, I don't have to buy a new one for my cosplay now.
I love the style. The purple's a little much for me.
No, I love the color.
See, I don't think it's overly purple.
It's a little too Joker for me.
I don't think it's overly purple. I think it's subtle.
In certain lights.
It depends on the lighting. It's more blue than purple.
It's also kind of sparkly, almost. It's almost got some kind of iridescent thread through it, which I liked.
I have a problem with that, too.
No. I liked it.
I definitely like the tails. No, or the long coat.
I like the style. I like the look of it. I don't like the purple.
Quite honestly, this to me...
And I love purple. Purple is one of my favorite colors, but I do not like the purple
one. This to me almost seems like the 11th Doctor finally has found himself.
As opposed to, I borrowed
somebody else's clothes, and this is what I'm going to wear for now.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
This is kind of where he was always meant to be, and he's just kind of now figured it out. That's what this felt like to me.
I think that scene I don't see the other coat in anything coming back. I think this was a casting off of the old. I think this was dropping the tweed jacket. This was getting rid of the fez.
Although, to be fair, the fez comes back. He pulls it out of his waist.
And puts it on that kid's head.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he's
gone. That's what I'm saying. It's a casting off of the.
The original fez was blown to bits.
That's true.
In a universe that didn't happen. So, it's.
Again, this was an allegory. I think that was casting off of the fez. I think that was Moffat saying.
Okay,
this is the last we're going
to
see.
There's a lot of this is we're moving to a new direction and a new era. It's a lot of the. The past three seasons, 2.5 seasons have been wonderful and magical. But we're now going someplace else.
The bow tie. Pulls it out. Quite an old box that it's in. Something very special. Opens it up. You guys didn't see the second Doctor's bow tie in there?
Oh, I could definitely see that. He opened it up and I went... It was smaller.
I said, that is the second Doctor's bow tie. He's about to put on the second Doctor's bow tie. I got chills when I saw that.
I never made that connection.
Oh, my God. I can't believe you didn't. I went... I did that. Oh, my God. That's the second Doctor's bow tie. It's a little ratty. It's black. Or very dark.
It's dark blue.
Yeah. It's got that kind of like not... It's got that hobo-ish look. It's not as fanned. It's not fanned out. It's that real slim... And I just looked at it and went, second Doctor's bow tie. He's putting on an old bow tie. I thought, this is Matt Smith's connecting to the second Doctor. This is what it is.
This is his brain
specs.
I didn't see that.
Maybe I read way too much into it. I looked at it and went, that's the second Doctor's bow tie.
How many times did you watch the episode?
That is the most incredible twice.
Okay, so I've only seen it once. So
that is the most incredible moment in this show, if that's
Matt
the case.
Smith's Doctor at that moment was very beside himself giddy. Not just with the I'm changing the wardrobe and getting rid of the, but when he, the way he played that, there was an added element. So I could, I totally buy that.
I may have read way too much.
Of course, the bow tie the entire time has been an homage to.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But this was like this was almost like solidifying it that you know, this is actually
this is like
I need to go back and relook
and
at
and actually wearing
closer.
The scarf instead of just putting it on.
And that's one of the things that sort of connects me to. That Moffat has this great intelligence theme running because that's a second Doctor thing. That was a second Doctor theme that ran through at least two stories in the second Doctor's era.
And the Ice Warriors are coming back.
The Ice Warriors are coming back, which is a second Doctor villain. I mean,
units
the Cyberman is coming back, which is a second Doctor for the most part, even though we got him in the last story.
Yeah,
but
Cyberman is, but yeah.
I mean, it's
the second Doctor. That's his villain.
It's like this is. Moffat, I mean, and the second Doctor was Moffat's first Doctor. I mean, that's the one he says that he first, you know, came to Doctor Who as with, even though it may not be his Doctor, so there's so much of a connection there in the 50th anniversary.
I can't wait for a newer, younger showrunner to come up and start giving us cat pins and...
Question marks.
I thought for sure
we'll all be going, no!
I thought for sure you at the very least would go, Did you catch the second Dr. Bowtie?
I didn't. <All right. laughs> I said, but I only saw it the once.
So disappointed.
So. did anybody else get like really over the top giddy just at the few glimpses? I know that we're getting all kinds of TARDIS in Journey to the Center of the TARDIS.
Just and a few, just running down the hall.
Running down the hall, changing direction, coming back. I didn't realize that there was a downstairs. I mean, I know it's kind of got that.
Oh, yeah, we didn't know there was a downstairs in this new console
until now. That, I mean, just every time they went into a different nook of the console room, I was like, ee! And, you know, because there was all this extra stuff to look at.
Yeah,
and
I thought the same thing.
Yeah, jazzed.
And the walls are very different in that hallway area than they are in the design of the console that we now know as the console room. So that hallway always has kind of a red hue to it and a little different, I don't know, it's not paneling, but the walls
well, the roundels
are just
a little different.
And they're a little
shape.
Different back in there. And so, that got me excited about it. I thought the same thing. We're going to see a lot more of this, but just to see that much of it in this episode was wow.
Cool. I did like the fact that Clara doesn't reuse it's smaller on the outside line.
Yeah.
That it wasn't the same line reused. That we went back to, yes, it's bigger on the inside. Mm-hmm.
I'm still on that, you know, emotion. Here's the weird thing. I'm gonna go ahead and throw this out there now before we get too far into the rest of this. As you said, fantastic moments, and so many of them.
Yes,
there were so many cool little ba-doom, 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 and it just hit on all of those, you know, played on my emotions and did all this kind of stuff, and it was fantastic. Quite honestly, I almost feel like I was a little underwhelmed by it.
I would agree.
It didn't knock my socks. It wasn't a Silent of the Dot. Yeah, I know. It didn't knock my socks off the
you
way.
You were underwhelmed too,
a little bit.
It did not knock my socks off the way. Asylum of the Daleks.
It wasn't
did.
Asylum of the Daleks. It wasn't Impossible Astronauts. It wasn't 11th Hour.
And
no,
I had,
it made sense. No, I'm serious.
No, I
that,
agree with
no,
you
11th
there.
Hour made sense.
And that's what made well.
I had to keep stopping.
11th Hour was. This I equate this one to 11th Hour. That I'll get there.
I just
a lot in tone. I think, but I think that's kind of what Chrissy was saying is that it felt like something
totally
new.
But that's how I equate it to 11th Hour. I agree with Chrissy 100%. This feels like something new, and there was the problem that I have with I still enjoy Impossible Astronaut Day of the Moon. We were trying too hard for that mind blown feel, and just pow that.
Having just watched it again, my mind is still blown.
this particular episode, that's just it. Yeah, so I don't compare it to that, but I actually enjoyed this better because it didn't feel like we were trying too hard to make.
Oh yeah,
it.
I didn't have to think.
That's
through
the problem.
This, which is I could sit back and enjoy. So
I think my biggest
the story is so.
Simple.
It's not that it's simple. It's just like I can't find
I'm going to throw a word out here, and don't hate me for using this word. Standard.
No.
I would agree.
The episode itself.
The moments are great. The moments are fantastic because it's the moments that make it. Oh wow! It's new and it's fresh
the
and it's
episode
this. The episode itself is just a standard episode of Doctor Who.
Feel like a standard episode. Yes.
And at its core, that's what it is. It's because I had to keep reminding myself this isn't a premiere. This isn't the it's just episode 7. In the long line.
Agreed.
I mean, this could have been the Western.
But even Let's
could
Kill
have been
Hitler,
on a spaceship.
Which was in the middle.
Well, yeah, but that was a continuation of a two-parter. I don't care what anybody says. You can't, I mean,
no,
when you
really
guys watched it on Friday night,
you continued on with
Let's Kill Hitler.
It's really not a continuation.
You have to put those two together.
But I can't put a word for what this was.
I think standard
because
is a good
standard
word for
it. is simplifying it too.
I don't mean that to sound mean. I don't mean that to be derogatory because I did enjoy this episode. I really did. But it could have been the pirate episode. It could have been the dinosaurs on a spaceship. It's just an episode.
You know what, I don't think it was a stellar companion introduction.
This episode felt like a standard story, but it was so much more dynamic. And I think part of that is because the chemistry between the two, the acting between the two is phenomenal. I thought every character
spot
on.
Yeah.
I think that the direction of this was fantastic. The shots are composed wonderfully. They're beautiful. Everything, the setup, the scenery, like the background, when they're sitting there having dinner, just the way that
breakfast.
How the cinematography.
It's a time machine. It's never too late for breakfast.
How the cinematography. I mean, just the backgrounds. It was gorgeous, and we kept putting the Shard in the background, and that was so. I mean, it was like. Of course, we knew the Shard was going to have something to play in because that's what they're crashing through in the poster. Yeah. Okay, but just the beauty shots of it. I mean, just the episode is composed so nicely. That's what gives it more. It's not a Curse of the Black Spot. It's not even the Doctor's Wife. It's so much better because of those elements. Even though it could be a standard story, if it didn't have all of that, then yes, I would say this just felt like a standard story.
I will give you that. It is a very well crafted episode. There's nothing that I can fault from a production standpoint.
Oh, no.
With the way this is put together, everything is very well done, and the Spoonheads.
They look great.
We're scary.
They look great, yeah.
Especially the head turning.
Yeah.
We only got the one shot
kind
of it
cheesy
as a robot. Mm-hmm. But just the whole idea of them, and then doing the scanners thing, you know, and then it rotates around. I was like, wow, that was creepy. So, I mean, they're, like I said, there's a lot to like in this episode. I don't know if it was because I had my hopes set higher than maybe they should have been. But I did. I threw that throughout the episode. I had to kind of keep reminding myself, it's just episode 7. That's why you're not feeling blown through the back wall of your home, you know.
See,
just
I think
jaw-dropping amazement.
Part of
I enjoyed
my
it. I
underwhelming
loved it.
Of it is the fact that I sat down.
I don't know.
Expecting
I still felt like
an 11th Doctor story, and it's very different from what we've gotten previously.
I would
totally
agree with that. Yeah, totally.
And
it's different.
I think that's why I sat down expecting the previous tone to continue, and it doesn't. And I think I was underwhelmed. Of it didn't have that high energy that I think the whole magical and
disagree.
Well, no,
and
I disagree
and
with
I think
you
this
on
was energy
that,
from start to be.
I think I wasn't as impressed with Clara as I was in the other two.
Well, she didn't have a lot to do in this one, though.
Yeah,
well, maybe that's why.
Keep in mind, she was zapped out twice.
Yeah,
knocked unconscious and whatnot.
Technically,
she was
died
dead
once.
Well, yeah.
She was dead both times.
No, they were still uploading, so they hadn't finished.
She was dead, though.
Clinically.
She was dead. They hadn't uploaded her entire memory and her soul or whatever they were uploading. She was dead.
I don't know. Now that I've seen that 2-minute scene of Demons Run 2 days later.
Oh, you were faking it.
Nobody's dead.
We didn't talk about that, did
no,
we?
No, we didn't. Nobody's dead anymore. Y'all just fainted. Until I see footage of them lowering your casket into the ground, you're not dead.
Nah, I think you just fainted.
Claire just fainted. The music, however, I think was very much a callback because somebody commented on this that was at the group. They said it felt very fairy tale. That was the first word they reached for with the musical tones. And with the exception of the plane crash, which, Doctor Who, BBC, can you please figure out your mixing board? Because every episode you've got this big bombastic bum, 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 and the Doctor's delivering this very, very quick line of dialogue about what he's going to do or what he's going to fix.
I'm starting to believe that it's his sound system because I didn't have a problem at all.
I've had other people, Kellen said the same thing. He said they've never had a good mix. Any episode he's ever watched, he said they've never had a good mix. But he says he always thinks that the music overshadows
There were some episodes in one season that I agreed with that, but this one I didn't have a problem at all.
The plane in particular, when he was rushing down the thing, got into the cockpit and was trying to explain who he is and what he does.
Yeah.
It was just kind of yet another one of those that I'm going to have to write this off.
I thought the music was loud, but I could hear what he was saying.
That was clear as day,
I didn't get it.
I think it was your mix on that one, because that was clear as day.
I've played with it, so I don't know. But anyway, they commented that they thought the music felt very fairy tale, which I think kind of harkens back to that Amy being the fairy tale. Amy's story is very much fairy tale.
But the fairy tale feel, I think, comes more from the snowman than Amy's. Like,
well, yeah, I'll give you that for
mystical
Christmas.
And journey, I would say more for Amy, and fairy tale. The dark fairy tale is what Moffat's trying to do, and he started that with the snowman. I think that's why. I don't know. I don't know how to explain it. This one didn't have the sense of adventure, I think, that the previous seasons had.
I don't think sense of adventure necessarily applies when you're dealing with, first of all, an Earthbound story, a London-bound story.
And maybe that's why I am. Why I'm coming down a little harder on this because it is an Earthbound story. And in the 11th Doctor's run,
actually,
we've had two.
I think you're Yeah. I think you're hitting the nail on the head of what I liked about this one.
It was back to RTD.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't RTD at all.
Well, it was closer in tone.
Right. It was not that grand scale of adventure that Moffat has been. You're exactly right. That's what's so different about this.
A grand scale adventure,
We're putting a lot more thought in telling the story rather than making it this grand adventure and making. A lot of times, especially in the last season, I thought, and it's that whole movie thing that he was going for.
Yeah, in the first half of the season. Yeah,
the first half of the season, there's these times that I really felt myself going, the story is suffering here for these big ramped up moments in the storytelling in order to kind of incite some sort of emotion in you, and so. This one didn't have that. It had really, really good storytelling, and you were invested in the story the whole time. Now, don't get me wrong. We've had great stories this season, but this one, it didn't feel like he was giving away – it wasn't giving away emotion in order to convey something, that the story was doing that itself. So there was never any moment where it felt like that big – you know, grand sense of adventure, and you're exactly right. That's what's different tonally about this, is with the exception of driving the motorcycle up the side of the thing, which then really feels like that boom, you know, RTD spectacle.
I'm so glad this story didn't have that.
Getting in the TARDIS and then coming out in the airplane that's crashing, that even was one of those moments of, I mean, it just wasn't that grand RTD feel, or even where Stephen Moffat's been going with it. It really paced out really well and made sense. And for the story, what was happening.
I think that's why. I went in expecting something different, and this is what I got. Now,
that's part of it being grounded. That really puts a finger on it.
If the tone remains the same, but they go off world, I might feel different. When they go off world next week, I might feel differently.
Right, right.
I can. Because we've all said how. Especially during RTD's run, how tied to present-day Earth they were, that we didn't like that.
Right,
well, and that's one of the things I like about Season 5 and 6, is that while they may be on Earth some of the time, it's not present-day constantly.
Yeah, and you're, I didn't think about it until you said that. We've only had...
two present-day Earth stories. We can't
Power
say...
Power 3 and
11th Hour.
11th this Hour. Season.
No, and since total. For the 11th Doctor. For present-day Earth stories... No, I take that back. There's four, because Hungry Earth, Cold Blood is present day.
But not London.
Well, okay. Well, now you're throwing caveats here, because Amy's Choice is present day, technically.
No, it isn't. It's set in the TARDIS.
Yeah, it's all set in the TARDIS and in their imagination.
Yeah, but the bulk of the imagination is set present day. So, I mean, yes, that gets off on a technicality.
And part of it also...
Everything else is future past.
And most of when we are in present day during those times, we aren't in London. Aside from part of Power of Three, we're in that small community.
Well,
it just has a different feel to it.
Yeah, maybe I think that's reaching to say London based.
Well,
none of the RTD stuff was London based. I mean, there was a couple, but.
You mean where the giant ship smashed into?
Well, the first season.
Season
9 was.
Season Martha.
Season 1.
The Lazarus experiment.
Yeah.
The one where they go up to the moon.
RTD was very much, let's film in London.
Always London.
Always a lot of London, RTD. Maybe that's why it feels a lot different, because you're right, that we haven't had much of that. Maybe that's it.
This is the first one that takes place in London for a long time. I'll give that, yeah.
Yeah, really. But... okay, so Clara. Let's talk about Clara. Now, you didn't like her as much in this one?
I didn't like her as much through three quarters of it.
When did you like her?
Once she got everything uploaded into her and kind of got a handle of what was going on, that's the Clara I've seen before.
See, I didn't
that, want... The one that stands toe-to-toe with the Doctor.
Previously,
she wasn't standing toe-to-toe.
Yeah, I see that. I didn't want that, though, because we've never really...
But that's what
they
promised us.
But we've never really gotten the... Clara traditional introduction, and this kind of satisfied that for me.
It was that.
Yeah.
I kind of hoped that from the get-go she was toe-to-toe with the Doctor, but she wasn't.
I don't know. I still kind of got that feeling, especially when she's leaning out the window and he's saying all that
stuff. Oh, she was being very charming.
She was just Clara there. I mean, she was so Clara.
Honestly, I still don't think either of the three versions, well, I mean, either of the two versions that we've seen of Clara in The Snowman or this one, harken back to Oswin.
Agreed.
Yeah. She's reached a whole different level with that version of her than what we've seen so far.
I would agree.
Keith, did you think that when the upload happened and she, or the download happened and she took all this computer information that suddenly clicked in,
did she feel more like that Clara we met in Asylum?
But did you think that this was going to be okay, the Doctor has met her prior in her time stream before he knows what's going to happen to her?
Could be.
You didn't think that, though.
I didn't think that. I just thought, oh, that's a nice reference, and now she's more like the Clara we initially met very beginning.
Right. Oh, okay, so that's what you mean by that.
Yeah,
okay.
That's what I meant.
Because I totally thought that this was where she gets that information
from. Considering how much further
from.
In the future it is, it'd be hard to do.
It's a time machine.
Well, but you didn't think that at all.
No. Because the Clara in Asylum of the Daleks, I mean, she was clearly on some mission with some crew, and she didn't recognize the Doctor.
She would recognize the Doctor.
This is not the same. Something's going to happen here.
He never saw her.
He never saw her, and she never saw him.
She saw him. We saw
through monitors.
Yeah, we saw
through Dalek eyes. That's the thing that you got to keep in mind. It's a stretch.
It's an eye stalk. It's
realistically, it's not the same.
No, I think that's.
And then that's the other thing, that reference of Oswin, and where that culmination leading to that. It was more reference to
again,
that.
Allegories. And I think allegory is even the wrong word, but yeah.
Whatever that word is.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was just... until...
Something will tie all of these...
Oh,
together. Don't get me wrong. But I don't think there is a linear tie. I don't think there ever will be a linear tie between all of the characters.
Maybe not.
But I guess it just wasn't until she was the 27 brains line, and she's like, "Really? Come on, come on, just give me the computer." That's when I was like, "This is the Clara that I really liked previously."
I think what
and
I like
she was that way from the stories.
Yeah, I agree with you that she took a while to kind of ramp up to where I kind of expected her to be.
Ramp up to where she should have started.
Well, I don't know about started, but I think a lot of that has to do with it depends on the direction you're wanting to write the episode. Because if you're bringing somebody in that is there, Riversong's a great example. The Riversong comes in, and the Doctor's put on his back foot now because he's got somebody that, A, knows more about him than, you know, he does
anybody
at this
does.
Point. And B, is tenacious enough to go after him and go toe-to-toe with him. He found that very intriguing in Clara in Asylum of the Daleks, but that was just because of the, you know, voice on the radio kind of thing, and he didn't have that, you know, interplay to play off of. But then you have other characters that... Normally, the way this works is the Doctor's the one that puts everybody else on their back foot because he's so, you know, insane. So it kind of depends, especially from a companion standpoint, on how you're wanting that dynamic to go. He's had companions that are perky and great and fantastic and fun and witty and all these different combinations of things before, with the exception of probably Romana, who started off at his level.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't have the real universe experience, but she had the book learning and in a lot of ways was more intelligent than he was. She kind of hit the ground with that, I can look at you in the eye and be on that same level. And I don't necessarily know that that's what Moffat wanted to do with this story. I think he was still easing her into he wanted her to be her own person. He wanted her to be somebody that the audience can still relate to and not knock the Doctor back immediately.
It's funny
he wanted that to come into it.
It's funny that you...
Does that make any sense?
It does. It makes sense, but it's funny that you equate Clara, even... Asylum of the Daleks, Clara, with Romana or River, because they're not, and not, I don't mean in the way that they're not the same character. I don't think they put him off guard as much as those two characters did, or go toe to, I don't think Clara ever has gone toe to toe with him as much as those characters did. To me, Clara has always been sort of the, just kind of inquisitive. She's not the dumb companion that comes in and has to ask all the questions, but she's been very inquisitive, and I wouldn't put her on par with the Doctor like I would some of those other companions you're talking about, and she's never gone quote unquote toe to toe with him, she's been able to kind of bounce back, and she's very charming and witty. And I get that from her,
yeah,
from that Clara. But I've never got that impression that she's anywhere near the same.
Yeah, not intelligence wise. I don't want.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not trying to compare him that way.
Okay.
I'm just even setting him off, you know, just off his foot. I don't think Clara's ever done that.
I think she did the snowman.
Clara is more.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think Clara. He's just intrigued by her, whereas like River and Ramon is even a whole different ball game. But using the River comparison, River was that.
Which is the closest thing. Because,
like you said, she knows more about him. That's what sets him off. That's what puts him off, is that he can't read her because she's like five steps ahead of him. With Clara, it's like Clara's kind of like Amy, where there's some sort of anomaly here, and he's more interested in the anomaly, not necessarily the character, the person. And so he grows to get to know the person, and I think then is more intrigued by the character. But I think it's the situation right now is that he's intrigued with. And
I haven't seen that
from the beginning.
I don't want to speak out of turn, but maybe Keith and I are thinking this, because realistically, the only, other than the three episodes that we've gotten Clara in, the only real piece of information that we've gotten is from that interview when they introduced her and Moffat said
she keeps up
with Matt Smith.
I think,
and
energy
so that's
wise,
kind of yeah.
See, and this, the first two, I thought she had the fantastic energy, and it wasn't until halfway through this one
that I thought
she got that energy back.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Maybe that's my issue.
She doesn't quite have the energy in this. I will agree.
Yeah.
And so I see where you're going.
But I think she is unconscious. I think that's
that
takes a lot to recover.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the character they're introducing. If you go back and look at Face of Evil with Leela's introduction, she hits the ground running in that one from the standpoint that this is her. You know, we're her home base. I mean, this is it. This is who
she is in
her element. But then if you look at another companion that we're introduced to that maybe, you know, well, you haven't got to Ace, but that would kind of be a good one because Ace is not in her element when she meets up with him. But, you know, they're not quite as settled. And so when this madman drops into their life with the box,
well,
it's
Perry
a completely different.
Or Tegan. Or there are a lot of them that they
I still haven't seen
introduced.
Perry or Tegan's introduction.
Yeah, that's true.
I did like the whole at the very end, come back tomorrow at 7. I did like that.
That to me was the final.
That was
that's
the,
Clara.
Yes.
There she is. She's here now, and we're going to get to see
it was
her
the,
tomorrow.
Maybe this
episode is molding her to who I expected
I think
her
that's
to
what
be.
Maybe,
that's,
yeah.
what
maybe
it is.
That's the intent, too, that Moffat had
for
this episode. I love the way that they teased me with this episode, because when he goes in and Clara's dead in the trailer, I thought, oh, God, she's just going to keep dying. She's just going to roy this thing all the way through. She's going to die at the... But I thought they were going to do this where she dies. Or she died at the end of Asylum. She died at the end of Snowman. And I thought, we're just going to stay on this pattern all the way through. She's going to die at the end of this one.
I kept
and he's
waiting
have to
for
find
her to
her
die.
Again. Well, here's the thing. When I saw that death scene so early on, what they had teased us with in the trailer, I thought was the end of this episode. When I saw it earlier, I thought, oh, that was clever. You tricked me. And then she does die again she goes unconscious again.
They pull her off the con.
When they actually
that
pull
time,
everything
I think she's
out of her.
Closer to death.
And
than
so
the first
then
time.
I thought, okay, well, there's what. But we're not going to leave it that way. What's, you know, somehow. And so when she actually comes back to life at the end, I thought, oh, we're not going to do what I
see,
good job, marketing department.
They pulled a Wrath of Khan, where it leaked that Spock's going to die in Wrath of Khan, and everybody lost their marbles. And so what did we do? Well, we killed him in the first 5 minutes
of
the movie.
Right.
And it turned out to be a simulation. Everybody went, oh, big sigh of relief. And then we actually kill him at the end of the movie. So, honest to goodness, she dies, comes back. I don't buy it. She dies again, comes back. I'm still... And she's up in the thing.
You're
like,
still
come,
thinking,
come
oh,
back,
she's going to die.
Come back tomorrow. And I'm thinking, this is where the plane's going to fall in the house. And the doctor's going to be like, because we're going to kill her. A bus is going to come crashing through the street. The villain is going to come back to life, like at the end of Die Hard. And I mean, there's something here that's going to kill her. And then the credits rolled, and I was like, huh. I mean, I really didn't expect her to live. I really didn't.
Yeah.
So, yeah, kudos to you for making me paranoid. Because now all bets are off. I don't know what to believe anymore.
We got to bring up the abominable snowman thing.
Yeah, let's talk about
the great intelligence.
The great intelligence and the Wi-Fi.
I have to go back to what Michelle said because I want to make sure something that she wrote kind of reminded me about this because the Wi-Fi doesn't really key me into anything except for.
What do you guys think of the use of the Wi-Fi? I mean, we talked a little bit about how a 24-year-old wouldn't know about how to connect.
Oh,
it's totally a way easier way for the intelligence to corrupt people and take over than snowmen. I mean, come on.
Yeah. No, I love the idea. I love the concept of this one. I think it was fantastic. No,
not that I didn't love snowmen, but technology has finally caught up to the great intelligence being able to use it.
Yeah.
One of the things that the abominable snowman does, and this is not going to give anything away for you guys or spoiler wise, but in there, the great intelligence, and this was not purposeful, but I think maybe I'm retconning something here, is the character in which the great intelligence is working through knows the doctor because the doctor had been at this monastery 200 years ago. But there's this impression that you get within the abominable snowman that the great intelligence knows the doctor. And I think you kind of work it out, really, that the reason the great intelligence knows who the doctor is because it's manifesting itself in this man who knew the doctor 200 years ago. In fact, he's been around this long.
Okay.
But now, what Moffat has done by setting, we were talking about the timeline here, how Snowman technically takes place before the abominable snowman. I almost wonder if it works in such a way that the great intelligence, the reason he knew who the doctor was in abominable snowman is because of the fact that he has already met him in the snowman. And because the London Underground 10 is almost a retconning of why the great intelligence then in Web of Fear uses that method in order to try to infiltrate London in that particular story, it almost is like that sort of retcons the fact of why the abominable snowman, the great intelligence knows who the doctor is at that point. So I wonder if Moffat has more of a grand theme going on here that he is really working some of these old stories in such a way that they can kind of coexist in continuity.
I would hope he's at least making the effort.
I would too, yeah. Especially if we're going to go this far to bring the great intelligence.
Yeah. So what you're saying is it's retconception.
Retconception, there you go.
layers of retconning.
Anyway, that's what I wanted to bring up about the abominable snowman. I'm actually very excited for you guys to start down that path, too. So we'll put it on the schedule.
It's funny because I know I've talked about reading the Target book for Web of Fear, and really all I remember is a lot of tunnels and chases and Yeti. I don't remember the Great Intelligence.
A lot of it takes place in the underground, and a lot of it is the Yetis because they're the heavy. They're
very much the heavy.
They're the henchmen.
And the web. With air quotes.
The web.
The mist, kind of. Yeah, I don't remember.
So it goes from the web to the World Wide Web.
I don't remember. Ooh.
So I love
the Web of Fear.
I love that Michelle brought up the fact that how it's Jamie's fault. So I'm excited to get there. and even though I've been spoiled on that, get a little bit more of a taste. But I do like that the great intelligence has been whispering in... what's her name? Kinsett. In her ear, and so at the end, and she's reverted to her original mind from when he started talking to her. Oh man, that was incredible.
That was
Where's my mommy and dad? Oh wow.
What do you guys think of the resolution in general? Of this, the doctor using the spoonhead to upload.
Oh. Totally did not see that coming. No. Oh my gosh! I thought that was a doctor all the way up to the.
I don't know. It's such a clever resolution.
Glad. I the more I looked at this poster image of the doctor and Clara on the bike,
see it happen.
Yeah, the more I looked at this, the more I just had this. This is one of those over the top doctor falling to Earth without a spacesuit kind of things, and it's so big and grand. And I was really worried. And AJ asked me, he says, are you really that kind? I was like, yeah, I am. He says, are you not going to like the episode if the doctor rides this motorcycle down the side of a building? I was like, no, actually, it won't. It will ruin it for me, yeah, depending on how it's done.
Luckily, so he wrote it up.
After the episode, he looked at me, he says, are you okay with it? And I was like, honestly, yeah. And here's why. Because A, it wasn't the doctor. It was a robot.
Right.
B, it wasn't a motorcycle.
It was an anti-gravity.
An anti-gravity bike. Okay, you fixed it.
That's all you needed. The anti-gravity was just enough.
It's still big and grand falling, and ridiculous.
But the doctor falling to Earth, there was a throwaway line in there that we all went, okay. Crash suit. We were like, okay. And then it repairs you after you...
Even that's the weird thing, I did have more of an issue with that. But the crash suit honestly wasn't the issue. It was he's in space without it. That was the part that bothered me. I know, two hearts, two best for Christmas, you know.
Yeah.
27 brains,
apparently. It was okay. We're going to let that one go. But so yeah, the motorcycle thing was totally yes, cool. And when he the helmet and then the head turned around. I was like, oh, cool.
When he says, well, I use technology as well. And I was like, no way. He reprogrammed that spoon, and just as I was thinking it, I was like, oh, wow. I totally did not see that coming. Yeah. That was awesome.
Note to all evil leaders and your minions and your henchmen and everybody. Don't post where you work on Facebook.
Yeah, really.
Is there a bigger allegory for what not to do with your web server?
Because that's almost kind of one of those things where Moffat's making a statement. But on the flip side of that, it was one of those things that you thought, God, that's so obvious. But it was so funny, too, in the moment. When he's, okay, raise your hand, or who's on Facebook. Even Google Plus gets a little nod in there. I mean,
Was it weird to anybody else? Who's on Facebook? And the hands went up. And then the next one I was mouth is MySpace.
Yeah.
It's like, really? Yeah. That's still awful. Yeah.
Justin Timberlake did revamp it.
That's true.
Really?
Yeah, he's part owner of MySpace.
Yeah.
Justin, I'm going to give you a piece of advice, buddy.
It's going through a new evolution.
If you're
going
to go out and buy something, if you're going to go out and buy a classic car company, you want to start remanufacturing DeLoreans.
Yeah.
Okay, that's something I can see. You want to go buy a classic candy manufacturing, bring back the Mars bar. Okay, sure, whatever. You want to go out and buy a classic website. MySpace was not it.
Did Mars bar ever go out?
No, I found them at Brits. You can't find them in town.
Mars bars across the street over there. No,
you can't find Mars bars. Because I look every Halloween for the War of the Worlds party, and I've never found a Mars bar. Ever.
I just looked at a Mars bar today.
I kid you not. They don't exist. Anyway.
Anyway, go ahead.
MySpace, not the vintage website that you could look to. No. It's not going to work for you.
Let's wrap it up. Keith's going to have to go to work soon.
Yep.
I don't care. I really don't. I'm sorry. I don't care. What was the... there was something else that we kind of skimmed over that we really needed to hit on, and now, for the life of me, I can't think of what it was, so I guess it wasn't all that important. The airplane. I'm sorry. This, to me, is one part genius.
Yeah.
And one part... devilishly over-effective.
Yeah,
What are you going to do? How are you going to take care of this? We're going to black out London, except for this area.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to throw an airplane at you.
Yeah.
It just bullseye.
It's a great demonstration also of the power of Wi-Fi and that they can have on everything.
Yeah.
Because before that bit, I was like, okay, they're in the Wi-Fi. They're taking people. What kind of great power is there other than kidnapping people?
The guy's standing there, the lights are coming up, and I'm totally expecting, okay, here's where we get the zombie chase scene with the mesmerized
things are
people
come out of these
coming
other
at
houses.
The things.
Yeah.
No. Airplane.
Yeah.
Fuck. I liked that. I thought that was really good. Now, from a villain standpoint, it's kind of like...
Well, and that one of the henchmen,
I'm going to throw airplanes at you.
Yeah.
Kiznet reminded me so much of Samantha Bonds.
Didn't she?
And the Bane. The way she plays the Bane mother, very very reminiscent.
I almost thought it was her at first. And then I had to look at her and go, no, it's not her. But
I didn't get that vibe.
Very reminiscent of Samantha Bond.
Huh.
Facial structure and, very, very.
Just
very
style, too.
I didn't get that. I'll be darned.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, and you talking about the blackouts, one of the henchmen was like, really, we're going to do this again? We can't keep blaming it on riots.
Yeah.
That was a nice line to add in there. That
sure was.
Okay, I'm done. I just wanted to talk about the airplane. That was really...
Yeah, the whole airplane scene was incredible. All the way from the fact that it's this grand plan of throwing an airplane to the fact that they transport on the board to the airplane, run all the way through the thing. What's the line? What is the line when he runs up there and it says, I was going to try to remember it for tonight.
And, well,
I'm an alien.
I'm an alien. I've got two hearts.
A thousand years old. I don't know how to fly a plane.
And I don't know how to fly an airplane. And then he asks her if she does. We'll do it together. And so he grabs both the yokes and he's pulling back on it. And then she grabs him and starts pulling back too. And I thought, that's fantastic.
And I love the fact that at this point, the only thing that's left to do is scream.
Ah! Yeah. And then the pilots start waking up, and he's like, I've canceled out your Wi-Fi, so you'll wake up and be okay now. And then they go back to the bag and pick up.
I have to watch it again to make sure the scene unfolded the way that I think it did from a technical standpoint. But it appeared that they did a very cool long shot of, we're running, and we go into the TARDIS, and they do that clever whip pan, where now all of a sudden we're on a different set. Didn't catch that one.
I noticed the cut and light change when they're standing in the TARDIS doorway before they go out on the airplane.
That's where I noticed it.
Yeah.
And it was done to try and make it look like it was all one continuous shot. Right. But I think that's like that one I caught. I didn't catch the one going in. So
as obvious going back in because you didn't have to. Well,
no, when they left from where they were at to go into the TARDIS to go to the plane.
That's what I'm saying. Oh, yeah. Well, no, when they left, it was obvious there. You know, that you're talking about when they went back into the TARDIS.
No, when they were on the ground.
No,
they did. They followed them because they look up. They see the airplane coming. They leave. They go into the TARDIS, which is a different set.
No, we're talking about when they come
out. What I'm saying is there had to have been a cut between being outside looking up at the airplane and being on the TARDIS set because it's a set. That's outdoors and indoors. You can't. There has to be an edit there.
Oh, I see. But what I didn't saying. See yes, that one. There's an edit there, and there's an
there
edit.
There is an edit there, but I didn't see it.
The, I see what you're saying.
But then when they get to the airplane, and then we're running right inside the TARDIS, and then we come back this way, I thought that one was very obvious that it was like a very badly hidden edit to make it look like we're going out.
I just mostly noticed the light change.
I think you're right. I think it was because of the lighting change. That was my one technical complaint about this story is that I saw that edit. And I wasn't looking for it.
Right.
Because you know us. We look for things like long takes and stuff like that because we're geeks and film aficionados and we like stuff like that. That was my one complaint is that the first one was seamless. I didn't even notice it. But because the second one was so bad, it made me realize that there should have been one in the first that I didn't notice.
All right. What's next on the schedule?
Well, you won't be here, but for Friday Night Who this week, we're watching Doctor Who the movie. Daphne Ashbrook, Paul McGann. And we're doing that in celebration of the fact that Daphne Ashbrook's going to be at Planet Comic Con, which is pretty much our whole weekend. It revolves around Planet Comic Con next week.
We'll be lucky if we get the new episode watched.
We may
next
not
weekend.
Even get watched. But realistically, I apologize.
Well, I'll get it watched next week.
Oh, I will too.
I apologize, constant listener. We're not reviewing it next week.
If you're going to tune in next week,
we're going to be talking Planet Comic Con. We've got a lot to do, and hopefully we'll have a lot of lovely Daphne Ashbrook stuff for you.
Yes,
in conjunction with that, and then next week for Friday Night Who, another throwback episode, something we've already reviewed, The Waters of Mars with David Tennant, and then we will do a twofer. You're going to get The Rings of Akhenaten, however it's pronounced, and The Cold War for our episode that week. So we'll be reviewing both of those.
All right, very good. Well, that's
it. And I'm still working on finalizing the rest of it.
And we'll get some Pertwee in next month as well. We're going to spread that one out as we go. Instead of
the comic will be coming up, the audio will be coming up, retrospective.
Oh, actually, are we going to do Prisoners of Time with Planet Comic-Con? Did we decide we're going to? I have that on the schedule, actually.
I think we did discuss doing that since it would be short.
The IDW comic. So we'll start there because that's our fourth month, third Doctor. So,
all right, well... Keith's got to go work, so until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
Good night, everyone.
Be seeing you.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.